It's Friday!
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this Friday on the Front Porch edition, the 16th of November, 2018. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us online. And that's a great and an easy way to get to the stream access from Headon.live. There's a stream player embedded right in the website there. So if you head over there, depending on how you've got your browser configured, boom, the program will start playing. If you're on a mobile device, there's a link you can click, and the audio will start playing. Also at headon.live, as most of you know, but I always mention this for any newbies who may be wandering by. Hi, newbies. Welcome along. Come on in. The conversation's fine. But that's where you also find access to the chat room. And in point of fact, if you click on chat room and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in there, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Little Thunder and Otto and Rally and Urban Prospector and Warrior Witch, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a Spacing Guild master, has stayed in Spacing Guild headquarters again today, very likely because of all the smoke. Out in Northern California, you will also be moderated by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. They're both there to provide you a happy chatting experience. And I gotta tell you, I saw something in the chat room last night. Our buddy Otto is in there, and this is kind of one of those brush with greatness moments. We've had several of them here. The minute I saw the link that Otto posted in the chat room, I recognized the face of a YouTube link from the old Tonight Show from 1980 with Johnny Carson. That's Otto's dad, not Johnny Carson, the guest. And the neat thing about that clip is Otto's dad, a physician, and a friend of the Tonight Show, was on there the same evening as Richard Pryor and Tim Conway, both in wildly different fashions, funny men at the top of their profession. And what is unique in this clip is the fact that I have never seen anybody reduce Richard Pryor to a state of speechlessness. He was on the Tonight Show, Otto's dad, something like over 60 times. But this particular clip is historic, because again, to see Richard Pryor reduced to speechlessness, helplessness. He couldn't stop laughing. Is simply amazing. So that was just one of those. That was just one of those cool little things that happened. But if you wander into the chat room, Otto might even repost the link for you if you ask real nicely. Mm-hmm. So you know, just one of those strange little things that happens here in our wonderful little community. And we have thanks to send out this evening to our subscribers. We begin every program doing that. Remember, a $10 a month subscriber is contributing something on the order of a 20th or a 30th of the cup of a cup of corporate chain joint coffee for every hour of programming in a given month. So thank you very kindly this evening to Matthew. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you to our buddy Reinhardt over on the Virginia coast. And thank you to Glenn in New York. And thank you to Timothy. Thank you one and all for being partial sponsors of the program. And thanks as well earlier in the day getting us started to our buddy Dustin out in the Sacramento area with the message, Happy Friday, Brother Bob. Happy Friday, Dustin. Happy Friday indeed. And, you know, we entered the program with only $200 to raise for the evening, just the regular Friday. So, you know, we're not talking about one of those Friday on the front porch community-made miracles. That happened last night. But we've only got $200, and then we subtract out Dustin's 15, and that's 185. And I had a note from Gary and Gaia, who are part of Gary and Gaia on the Lonely 13th, as far as the subscribers go. And they said that they would put up a $50 challenge to get things wrapped up for the week. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Gaia, out in Oregon. So there's a $50 challenge on the table, which means that if that gets met, then we'll only have $85 more to go, and we'll be done, just done, for the week. And that is awesome. Just freaking awesome. Okay, so that's where we are. The PayPal button is over at headon.live. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can use the button there and check the little box that says make this happen on a monthly basis or whatever it is it says there. Or you can go to Patreon. Patreon.com. There's a Patreon link there at headon.live as well. Those subscriptions all come out at the first of the month. Just every month the same way. Okay, so if you were to become a Patreon subscriber, you wouldn't even be billed until December the 1st. All right, so that takes care of all of that. And again, it's Friday on the front porch, which means that here in about 50 minutes or so, we will I will ask Sparky to put out the breadcrumb trail. And since it's freaking dark here on the East Coast now, to shine the Spacing Guild spotlight off of the clouds, at least here where it's visible in the world of darkness, and shine the Bob signal and lead folks to the down that path to the old holler tree that we rent from the Keebler elves, and wherein we keep the extraordinary ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday. If you'd like to gather around that extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, well, you need Skype, okay? Skype makes it all ever so much easier when it works. We all have a sort of uniform agreement that the new Skype interface, probably because it's by Microsoft, sucketh monumentally. But nonetheless, if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, well, by Jove, all you have to do is send a contact request, if you never have before, to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, one word, on Skype, and Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail and shine the Bob signal off the clouds for you. If you can't use Skype, if Skype plumb evades you, kind of like the Boogaloo, well, we have one phone line, and that, of course, is the stress line, You can reach it toll-free if you don't have some sort of nationwide long-distance plan. Toll-free from the U.S., Canada, or Mexico. We're still waiting for our first call from Mexico. But that number is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then if you do have unlimited long-distance dialing, then 304-640-2829 gets you into the thick of things. Okay? Okie doke. So that gets everything pretty well caught up. And we'll... We'll see where the rest of the program takes us. Otto tells me that his father's best-selling book was Feed Your Kids Right. Feed Your Kids Right. And I think he was actually talking about that book a little bit in the clip that I mentioned earlier. And I would play some audio, but the audio is not... It's one of those moments that you've got to... You got to have the video. Because it's, well, there's just not a lot of, you're not going to find a lot of instances where Richard Pryor was reduced to speechlessness. No, no. Let's see. You know, a little bit of sad news to get the program started. It's sad, but at the same time, it's not hopeless. And that is that Stacey Abrams, who had been the Georgia Democratic Party nominee for governor, acknowledged today that she's not going to be the governor of Georgia. That's sad. But what is empowering and what is strong and what is powerful in its own right is the way that she made that plain. She said that in her effort to get all the votes counted, the law currently allows no further viable remedy. Then she continued, "Let's be clear. This is not a speech of concession, because concession means to acknowledge an action is right, true, or proper. As a woman of conscience and faith, I cannot concede that." So while it stings to realize that a crook like Brian Kemp is going to be the governor of Georgia, by the same token, look, and I mean, he's the Republican nominee. He should have sailed to victory. I mean, the Democrats haven't elected a governor of Georgia in 20 years. And so it should have been a cakewalk for Brian Kemp. But he had to lie and cheat and steal and engage in every filthy last bit of voter suppression, voter oppression, voter registration denial. He had to do everything in his power just to scrounge up those miserable 18,000 votes that kept him from being in a runoff with Stacey Abrams. Think about that for a moment. Georgia Stan, one of the reddest of the red states, had a gubernatorial candidate who had to use the vast powers of the Office of Secretary of State to make sure that so many voters were disenfranchised that his opponent had no chance. And yet Stacey Abrams came within 18,000 votes of forcing a runoff. That is amazing. And I suspect it has the Republican Party in Georgia, as the Republican Party is in other blood-red states, shitting their britches. Because they have seen the moving finger right upon the wall and seen it having writ move on. What does the moving finger write on the wall? Something like many, many takel ufarsin. It comes from a Bible story in Daniel 5. It was at the palace of Belshazzar, who was the king at the moment of Babylon, the son of Nebuchadnezzar. Well, apparently, he was rich, and he was debauched. He cared nothing for the well-being of others. And he threw a big banquet for his sycophants. And they all got liquored up. And then they, at the party, they hauled out the sacred vessels that they had plundered from the temple in Jerusalem when they, Nebuchadnezzar had plundered it when he conquered the area, long about 586 BCE. And as they were doing, blasphemous things like, drinking out of the sacred vessels or whatever, suddenly a magic hand showed up and began to write on the wall, "Mene, mene, mene, tekel, ufarsin." And it scared the bee-jabbers out of Belshazzar. And nobody knew what the words meant. So that's when they called for the prophet Daniel. And he'd been carried away into the Babylonian captivity from Judah. And he said, "Mene, mene, tekel, ufarsin," means God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Ufarsin, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Interestingly, out of this myth from the Old Testament, we're not told what language Mene Mene Tekel Ufarsin comes from. I prefer, in the grand scheme of things, to think that it's Reformed Egyptian. Or Colabian, or whatever. But that line, numbered, weighed, and divided, it really does kind of apply to the Republican Party going forward, doesn't it? The days of Republican control, even in red states, are numbered. And they will come to an end. Because through all of their vile behavior, Republicans have been weighed and found wanting. And the division that they have caused in this country, well, is not going to work out well for them. So, hey, Brian Kemp, buddy, mene mene tekel ufarsin, pal. Mene mene tekel ufarsin. Tekel, who knows? I missed that class on Reformed Egyptian. So it's sad, but it portends great things. And I don't think we've heard the end of Stacey Abrams either. I think Stacey will be back. Who knows? There might just be a senator up for re-election in Georgia in 2020, a Republican senator. And if I was that pasty-faced, doughy old white man, I would be shaking in my boots at the prospect of having to face off against Stacey Abrams. Because, of course, she came out of the Georgia legislature, so she knows what it means to engage in governance. She is not a babe in arms when it comes to legislative procedure. Yeah, I know. 2020 is 2 years away, and it's going to go like that. And we're going to be up to our eyeballs in weird. Now, to be fair, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is brand new to the idea of governance. But she has a great weight of hope and aspiration propelling her forward. And she has gone to Washington, D.C. for House of Representatives school. Learn how to be a member of the House, what the rules are, and right. And the White Wing has been laughing and laughing because she said that until she starts being paid for being a member of the House, she doesn't really know how she can afford an apartment in Washington, D.C. Because, well, the rents in Washington, D.C. are crazy high. And the White Wing just thought that, I mean, that just plumb tickled them. It all came from some remarks she made to the New York Times. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying, I have 3 months without a salary before I'm a member of Congress, so how do I get an apartment? Those little things are very real. But she did save up money from her bartending job. And over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, again, the panelists on America's Newsroom giggled their fool heads off. Self-proclaimed socialist says she can't afford D.C. rent. She immediately burned them to the ground. She tweeted, it's bizarre to see 1% salaried anchors laugh at the U.S. housing crisis. There's no reason to be ashamed or embarrassed. As much as Fox News likes to mock the working class, the real scandal is that at the wealthiest point in our history, we are at one of our most unequal. Every statement of which is absolutely true. She added, mocking lower incomes is exactly how those who benefit from and promote wealth inequality the most keep everyday people silent about one of the worst threats to American society. But the rich are getting richer, and the poor, poorer. And of course, in the context of the fires in California, the availability of affordable housing has been brought into stark and sharp focus, and will only become more so. But here's the thing. One of the people who made sport of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a creep named Eddie Scarry, who works for the Washington Examiner birdcage liner. And Eddie Scarry has a history of posting photographs of young women taken without their consent. And putting it on social media. Usually he likes to take those pictures of females from behind. He is referred to as a butt snapper. He photographs women's rear ends and then tweets about date rape and calls at least one female reporter a whore. Writing about one woman's posterior, he said, "The pink one's particularly bulbous, but the lumpy gray one takes the cake and eats it too." Yeah, he's real gross. He came to the Washington Examiner when things began to fall apart over at the Beckerheads joint, The Blaze. And so he posted a picture taken from behind of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and tweeted, "Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they took just now. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles." Well, you know, unless, Eddie, you perv, you got up and looked at the actual labels inside, and it's just a women's suit. It's a black women's skirt suit, jacket, skirt, and I presume a blouse underneath the jacket. But there are these things called thrift shops and vintage clothing stores. But, of course, you know, Republicans don't think about that. They think that she's secretly some sort of filthy rich little daddy's girl, because that's the only way they can imagine women in white wing world. Because they're disgusting. Yeah, but probably the best thing I've seen today. And go ahead and, you know, get the hockey puck. Was the soundbite from Julius Geezer today. Yeah, this is a rich one. He's still feeling fairly combative. By the way, note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is exactly what the Dems need. She doesn't take any of that right-wing shit lying down. She comes right back and hits them hard. She did not let the crack about her outfit slide by. And the douchebag backed down. Yeah, Eddie Scarry met his match. Well, he was reaching way out of his league trying to best Alexandria. Fail. That's what Dems have to do. Hit him back immediately and hard. Alexandria is exactly what the doctor ordered. You go, girlfriend. Keep on keeping on. Yeah, once we get the Republicans to the point where they're saying, "Thank you, ma'am, can I have another?" We'll know we're making progress.
Ooh, I want to be spanked too.
Oh, dear God. That's just gross. Ron in Raleigh says, "If you think the rents are right high right now, wait until the robber baron Jeff Bezos rolls into Alexandria, Crystal City, Virginia. The rents all over Metro D.C. will skyrocket. Crystal City and Queens, New York, will shovel upwards of $3 billion into the pockets of the richest man in the world. It takes Jeff Bezos 11 seconds to make what the average American worker, what the average Amazon worker makes in a year. Greedy bastards need to be taxed like they were in the 50s. Now the Republicans are getting rid of the inheritance tax. I agree. And we haven't talked a whole lot about the Amazon thing, just because it's been sucking the oxygen out of the room in so many other broadcasts. But what a monumentally fucked up decision. Take the vast intergalactic HQ2 for Amazon and split it in two and make matters worse in not one location, but two. Yeah, sure. Why not? It's going to be awful. And I do. I feel sorry for what's going on because rents in the places where they're already going are indeed bad enough. And they're going to become untenable after the shit hits the fan. But by the same token, I do not blame Amazon for not going to... Well, they threw a sop to Nash Vegas, but they didn't go to Atlanta. They didn't go to Charlotte. They didn't go to any city in Miami. I suspect, whatever ill we will say of him, I suspect Jeff Bezos is intelligent enough to acknowledge the reality of climate change. So it kind of makes you wonder about the decision to, well, put it where he put it. And cities were more than happy to completely abase themselves in the hopes of getting the location. But in the long run, the cities that didn't get the location will probably be the real winners in all of this. Note coming in from Silent R. Lamar. Message to Republicans, you can cheat and lie for only so long before the truth comes out. As a party of liars and cheats, Republicans, face it, your hold on power, the days of your hold on power are numbered. Brother Deacon Asa, over to the east of me, you know, across the pond right now, says that second Amazon HQ should have been in West Virginia. I said it from day one. We are centrally located to the entirety of the East Coast and much of the Midwest. That's one of the things that makes the tourism industry here where I live such an appealing prospect. It's one of the things that would make this state an intergalactic tourist definition if we only had the common sense that God gave a Gosling to legalize cannabis. But we don't really have anywhere to stick 30,000 people right off the bat, which is the sort of numbers that they're talking about jobs-wise. But it's going to make a straight-up mess of the Crystal City area and that area of Queens. I mean, really? Alexandria, Virginia? Has anybody from Amazon ever tried to drive in Northern Virginia? It's a disaster. People who live out in the Nova Burbs, who work in D.C., spend about 4 hours out of every 24 parked on a highway somewhere just trying to get to work. Yeah, no kidding. And then there are the stories of what various cities did in an attempt to try to get Amazon's HQ2. For instance, Chicago, and this is hilarious, Chicago put together a pitch video and got William Shatner, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, to do the voiceover of its pitch video for HQ2. And on top of things, Chicago offered $2.25 billion in money, and maybe even more than that, if Amazon created a set number of jobs. Half of that was tax credits, you know, Amazon not having to pay taxes. Then there was $400 million that was set aside for roads, sewers, and other infrastructure needs for the areas that were at present under or undeveloped. How interesting. The city of Chicago could find that kind of money if Amazon was coming there, but somehow or another, while the money is there, they can't find it just because putting those kinds of services in are the right damn thing to do. Man, that corporate socialism is some something. Socialism for corporate America. Brutal realism capitalism for the proles. Columbus, Ohio ponied up $500 million, offering to forego taxes at 100% for 15 years. They also offered to give a 35% income tax refund for 15 years. Now, bear in mind, the Amazon workers are not going to be treated that way. Came out to about $50 million a year, $400 million over 15 years, and $75 million in reimbursement for site prep. Jesus. $600 million from Dallas was put on the table. And that didn't include the state of Texas ponying up another $500 million. And Dallas even offered to build a brand new school called Amazon U. And then they'd get some boosters in there so they'd have a respectable football program. I added that part. And then there's Hotlanta. The one possible place where Amazon could have gone that didn't have traffic, that had traffic that was actually worse than Northern Virginia or New York City. Yeah, Atlanta was going to put $2 billion on the table and stick the taxpayers of Georgia with it. They, too, were going to create a higher education institution called Amazon Georgia Academy. And they were even going to give Amazon executives their very own lounge at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, the ATL, as well as free parking at the airport. They even offered a standalone car on the MARTA system to help, quote, distribute products around the city. You know, a long time ago now, probably 2006, a brilliant man by the name of Greg LeRoy wrote a book called The Great American Job Scam. And the Amazon HQ2 debacle is straight out of everything he was talking about back 12 years ago, 13 years ago. It's worth a reread or a first time read if you've never read it before. Ron in Raleigh says the whole thing was a scam. That whole pageant. Jeff has a home within 30 minutes of each new location. Jeff wasn't about to put his headquarters anywhere he wasn't going to live. I was praying they weren't going to be anywhere near Raleigh. These goddamn tax incentives have got to stop. Locate your fucking headquarters where they need to be without being paid to do so. The people of Wisconsin are on the hook for a Foxconn job for 25 years with no hope of ever breaking even. Corporate taxes in Wisconsin are at 0.4%, 0.4%. And that is simply ridiculous. But since Ron did mention what a disaster that would have been for the Research Triangle area of North Carolina, well, hey, big news out of Raleigh. After the heavy rains, because climate change, that fell there in the last week or so, well, millions of gallons of wastewater. How about we just call it waste? It's not very good at being water anymore. Dumped into creeks and streams over the general Raleigh, North Carolina area. A city news release said, "The severity of this rain event was not predicted. The amount of localized flooding was the result of 4 inches of rainfall within a 12-hour period, overwhelming the sanitary sewer system." So here's what that means. Big Branch Creek, Marsh Creek, Walnut Creek, Crabtree Creek, and several other unnamed tributaries that lead to them, well, they were the recipient of 7,083,958 gallons of untreated waste. And at one point in time, 5 million gallons of sewage dumped into Marsh Creek at 3204 Yonkers Road. Moffett Pipe Company was repairing aging infrastructure, and they'd set up an 18-inch bypass pipe. It flooded, and when it flooded, an equipment trailer on the site cut loose and decided to do its best impression of a boat and banged into the bypass pipe, and boom, 5 million gallons of waste. Into the creek. Ed Buchan, Raleigh's senior utilities analyst, said the pumps were wide open at this point, so they were going like crazy, so they had no way to get there to turn them off. They couldn't control it till the water receded a bit. And when the insurance claim is filed, the insurance company will answer, "We don't pay. Act of God." Because good things that happen are never claimed to be acts of God, only the really rotten ones that are caused usually by some sort of human error. So I don't know what this means for people who want to live a reasonably healthy life in the Raleigh area, but it can't be good. Mm-mm. Oh, what else? What else? Like I said, it was a very bad day for the Trump regime today, because a federal judge handed Trump his ass in regard to Jim Acosta, ruling that Jim Acosta, by God, gets his press credentials back and his hard pass that was seized by the Secret Service on a trumped-up bullshit charge. literally trumped up. But they let cameras roll around Julius Geezer, and things went south rather quickly. Yeah. Wait, before we get there, a clip from, my filthy little habit this morning. I was watching when, and just let me say hi to whoever's listening. Hi, y'all. Hey, Donnie. Not Trump, Deutsch. For a while now, I've been saying that it's going to get so bad with Geezer Disgustus that they won't, they probably won't be able to let him out in public for fear that he'll start tearing his clothes off and playing with himself in front of the whole wide world. I think the level of his mental degeneration is probably approaching similar levels. And lo and behold, you know, I say it here, it comes out there. This was Donnie Deutsch this morning over on the MSNBC Morning Zoo crew.
Let's go to the growing questions over what has inspired President Trump's 2 days of public tirades against Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe into Russian interference in the 2016 election.
Okay, so that's Mika doing the intro. Then there's a lot of blather. And then Joe yaks some. And then Susan Del Percio, Republican strategist, yaks some. And then Willie Geist, who looks a little bit like Jason Isbell, talks some. But then along comes Donnie Deutsch, to whom I give some credibility, because Donnie Deutsch is a longtime old chum or acquaintance or whatnot of the Chlamydia Claudius. He's apparently done a few 12-ounce curls with Michael Cohen and whatnot. And he offered up this assessment.
Light. You don't have to be
Hillary
Clinton.
It's all on tape.
You don't have to be Sherlock. Like, he obstructs in the light of day.
The absurd moves he make, I think, will get heightened. You know, we're seeing a different guy now. Donald Trump a few weeks ago was scary. You know, I'd say he was like a Bond villain. He was like Goldfinger. And now he's more like Dr. Evil, where he comes on, and instead of getting angry, you kind of almost chuckle. There's a patheticness to him that's starting to show that hasn't been there in the past. Donald Trump has always been, Susan used the word, in control. Even in the lowest part of his life, when there was the bankruptcy, you know, when you're a company and you're bankrupt, you still own the banks. You know, and in a strange way, you say, here, take the keys. So he's never not been in control. And we're going to see now a caged animal. And I think we're going to see behavior so much more aberrant than anything we've seen.
Aberrant behavior.
Just watch this man. There's a great old movie, The Seduction of Joe Tynan. I don't know if you remember this, with Alan Alda. And there's this old character who plays an old congressman, Melvin Douglas, who at some point to the camera starts talking French at a congressional hearing. I think we're going to start to see in the coming weeks something happen with Donald Trump on camera. Some tweets go to a new level that even Republicans are going to start to come out from under the rocks.
Yeah, I think so. And John Meacham.
So that's another way of saying what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now. I may not be right about this, but I'm just speculating. So it's okay. I think the reason he didn't go out when he was in France, and then when he was back home to Arlington for the wreath laying ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown. And everybody said it was because he was afraid he'd get his hair wet. Well, okay. But I think he's getting so bad off that there are just days that he cannot be allowed to be seen in public. And we may be getting nearer and nearer that meltdown if, in fact, there really are indictments on the way. And today seemed like a milepost on that little trip. He took a question. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini did. And we were off to the races.
Is agitated about what you might be receiving the Mueller investigation.
No, I'm not agitated. It's a hoax. The whole thing was a hoax. There was no collusion.
Did anything trigger that set of tweets?
No, not at all. No, I'm very happy. I'm very happy with the White House. I'm extremely happy with our country. We're doing better on the economy. Maybe it's the best economy we've ever had. They may be the best unemployment numbers and employment numbers that we've ever had. There are more people working in the United States right now at this moment than have ever worked in the United States by far. I'm extremely happy. I'm very happy with almost all of my cabinet.
With almost all of my cabinet? Huh. I wonder who he's not happy with. Maybe Zinke, because he's under criminal investigation. There's really no way of knowing. Cheryl writes in and says, "I thought he wouldn't go out because he was afraid his self tan would run off and he'd lose his perfect complexion." Well, that's a subset of being afraid to go out in the rain. I just based on his behavior, I think they're having trouble getting the meds right. Oh, and I love when my little observations engender further observations. Just got a note from our buddy Reverbo, the human boy. Your point about acts of the Christian God only associated with tragic events is fascinating. You're right. A perfect season that yields a bounty of Florida oranges is apparently an act of nature, whereas a more supernatural explanation is often proclaimed when a twister wipes out a trailer park in Arkansas. Well, yeah, and then there's the subset of the twister landing in Arkansas, in which somebody who has not died is standing next to the wreckage of a place where somebody died and says, "Thank God we survived." Yeah. And, of course, with the Florida orange analogy, when Florida oranges just grow like Florida oranges ought to grow, that's normal. But when a killing frost comes along and wipes out the orange crop, once again, there he is, act of God. You know, under that rubric, you'd almost feel pretty confident saying that that whole God of love thing is a bunch of baloney, and that he appears to be a God of evil and malevolence, a malignant God, if you will. And then we'll go back to the clip in a minute, but there's the other story that's out right now, that time after time after time after time lately, the Marmalade Mugabe has been talking to his advisors and his close associates and asking, "Do you think Mike Pence is loyal to me?" This from a New York Times story. And it's happened enough that his advisors are beginning to, well, freak out a little bit. And it wasn't that long ago that he had Mike Pencil Neck Geek with him at one of his maggot rallies, and or it was a press conference or something. They said, "Well, are you gonna?" Maybe it was at that combative press conference on November 7th, where he got into it with Jim Acosta. Was it? Where somebody said, "Well, sir, are you gonna run with Mike Pence again?" And he said, "Oh, Mike Pence, we get along fabulously. I haven't asked him, but hey, Mike, will you run with me?" "Oh, yes, Daddy, sir, Mr. President." Well, when the spirochetes get active and your paranoia ramps up, and hey, it may not be spirochetes, it may just be the speed, extreme paranoia comes with stimulant abuse. You may recall a certain former German corporal with a penchant for Charlie Chaplin mustaches was given quite a bit of amphetamines and became a raving paranoiac toward the end of his reign of terror. White House advisors told the New York Times that the questions could indicate that Trump has grown irritated with Mike Pencil Neck Geek. I'm sure he's jealous as hell that Mike Pencil Neck Geek is the one who went to the ASEAN conference this week. And Julius Geezer had to stay home. And by the way, why is that? That's one of those meetings presidents go to. But Trump can't travel that far after a lengthy flight in the opposite direction. Do I have that right? And so Pence got all the publicity out of that meeting? While President Grandpa Grumpy yells at clouds, had to stay home. Yeah, what's that old saying? Help, help, the paranoids are after me. Yeah, right. So remember, when last we checked in on this clip, he was saying, "I'm mostly happy with my cabinet."
And, you know, changes are made because they're always made, especially after midterms. But it's all fake news. I'm thrilled with the way the country's going.
It's all fake news doesn't even fit in there. It's all fake news is just something he says now like a verbal tic. Yeah, exactly. Steve in New York says, "Does Pence like me? And why did he steal the strawberries? I caught him. I fooled him with the strawberries. They thought I was crazy, but I..." Yeah.
"I think on foreign, we're doing very well. We're making trade deals."
On foreign what? In foreign relations?
On foreign.
And that's another verbal tic of his. He can't put together entire phrases. He can't say cybersecurity or cyber warfare.
On cyber.
"We just made a deal with Mexico. We just made a deal with Canada. We just made a deal with South Korea that are phenomenal deals, and they were horrible deals before."
"But you seemed unhappy with the Mueller investigation, particularly yesterday morning."
No, it's just a continuation. You can go. There should have never been any Mueller investigation because there was never anything done wrong. There was no...
Wait, what is that you can go? I mean, the camera stays on Julius Geezer. It's the same reporter. And he's not hectoring him. The hell is that?
that are phenomenal deals, and they were horrible deals before.
But you seemed unhappy with the Mueller investigation, particularly yesterday morning.
No, it's just a continuation. You can go. There should have never been any Mueller investigation because there was never anything done wrong. There was no collusion. There never has been. You would have known about it a long time ago if there were.
He didn't ask him any of that. He keeps asking. He keeps answering questions that nobody asked him.
There was nothing. They should have never had it. They've wasted millions and millions of dollars. They should have never been.
Speaking of wasting millions and millions of dollars, we've got somewhere north of 5,000 U.S. servicemen and women camped out on the border, the Texas-Mexico border, who even the Secretary of Defense, when asked, what is the mission down here? And he was asked by one of the people who's stationed down there, you know, a soldier. And Mattis said, well, you know, we don't really know. That was the Secretary of Defense saying, we don't really know. Mm-hmm. Don't really know. Yeah, that's costing a few millions of dollars. I imagine it may wind up costing more than the Mueller investigation could ever dream of having cost.
So-called investigation, which in theory it's not an investigation of me. But it's, as far as I'm concerned, I like to take everything personally because you do better that way.
The hell does that even mean? I take everything personally because that means he sees everything through the lens of it's got to be about him. He ain't all right. And I wouldn't mind finding a betting parlor and putting down a fin on the idea that at some point he starts tearing his clothes off and playing with himself in public. Because that's where he's headed. He's in, you know, I joke a lot about the goddess of irony, and she's no joking matter. But it seems more like, if you want some sort of deistic approach, it seems more like he's in the hands of the ancient Greek furies. You read up on them. It's not somewhere you want to be. No. And all of this is what the trial lawyers would refer to as non-responsive. It's just a stream of consciousness monologue that doesn't answer the question that was put to him. Or he answered the question that was put to him, and then away he went.
The witch hunt, as I call it, should never have taken place. It continues to go on. I imagine it's ending now. From what I hear, it's ending. And
well, somebody's lying to you, sir. It ain't ending.
I'm sure it'll be just fine. And you know why it's going to be just fine? Because there was no collusion. The fact is, I was a much better candidate than Hillary Clinton.
Oh, here we go with that.
I went to the right states. She went to the wrong states.
Anybody who has ever had anyone that they love in their family or an acquaintance or whatever and watched them slip into dementia knows exactly what they're hearing here. This is not an ordered mind. This is a disordered mind. This is a mind where the synapses are firing like the timing's off on a 1962 Pontiac Tempest.
She was not a good campaigner. Obviously, I campaigned very well, and I easily won the election in the Electoral College. 306, I guess it was 306 to 223. That's a big difference.
And you provide
220, 223, whatever it takes.
Answer, sir.
About what?
The special counsel. Your lawyer's working
with you. Yeah, is that my lawyer?
Okay, so here's the question, and this is where it gets really hilarious. We know that Mueller has submitted written questions because Trump refused to take an oath to tell the truth and sit down and be questioned live. And so rather than litigate that all over again, now especially that, you know, remember, Brett Kavanaugh back during the great Clinton cleanus hunt insisted that porn fan star had a right, an absolute right, to question Bill Clinton, and then Brett Kavanaugh further insisted that they needed to ask the filthiest questions they could come up with. But after it was all over, and a Republican got back in the White House, suddenly Brett Kavanaugh had a change of heart and decided that the president can't be bothered with such shenanigans. So rather than litigate it upward and maybe have some sort of ruling that you don't want to have, Mueller submitted written questions. Now, anybody who's ever been in any kind of a lawsuit that went to discovery, even a car wreck where interrogatories are served, you do not let the client answer the interrogatories because they are a formalized process. It is stylized to a certain extent. There are ways that question four, whatever question four is, answer four, we object. The question is overbroad. The question is irrelevant. The question seeks privileged material. The question seeks work product that is not subject to discovery. There's a billion different objections that you offer as a response to an interrogatory. You don't just answer the damn question. Okay, I put all that forward because of the answer you're about to get. The question is, what about the questions from Mueller?
I was not a good campaigner. Obviously, I campaigned very well, and I easily won the election in the Electoral College. 306, I guess it was 306 to 223. That's a big difference.
And you provided answers, sir?
About what?
Special counsel. Your lawyers working on that?
Yeah, my lawyers aren't working on that. I'm working on that. I write the answers. My lawyers don't write answers. I write answers. I was asked a series of questions. I've answered them very easily. Very easily. I'm sure they're tricked up because, they like to catch people. Gee, was the weather sunny or was it rainy?
I guarantee you none of the questions that he's been asked by Robert Mueller have a goddamn thing to do about the weather.
He said it may have been a good day. It was rainy. Therefore, he told a lie. He perjured himself. Okay, so you have to always be careful when you answer questions with people that probably have bad intentions.
So now he's accused Robert Mueller's team of having bad intentions, not of being oath-bound and duly sworn to defend the Constitution of the United States, but to have bad intentions. And I assure you, if he's writing the answers to the questions, it's with the brown and the black Crayolas on some construction paper, and the lawyers are tearing their hair out, going, "Oh fuck, okay, so we'll just answer him, but we'll tell him he's writing the answers, okay? Are we all on one? Yeah, we're all on the same page. Okay, good, because I want to keep being a lawyer when this is over." Yeah. Oh, I love it when my little throwaways get caught. There's Glenn. A Pontiac Tempest with a slant four. Oh, that's for you, Glenn. Yeah. Yeah, I wrote the answers. I definitely wrote the answers. I wrote them slow. Of course, this is not my underwear.
But, the questions were very routinely answered by me. By me.
Okay. You mean your special counsel? And you submitted the answer?
I haven't submitted them yet. I just finished them. As you know, I've been a little bit busy. We've been in Europe. We've been working on various deals.
Yeah, I've been a little bit busy. I stayed in a hotel room. I had a meeting with my boyfriend. I mean, my colleague Vlad Putin. I blew off the memories of several thousand dead service members, and then we flew back home. And then I blew off the memories of the unknown at the Tomb of the Unknown. You know, sometimes they want you to go see the Tomb of the Unknown, and it's not for good reasons.
Finished the USMCA. If you look at that deal, which is one of the great trade deals, you'll see. I mean, you can see how happy our farmers are. We've done a lot of work in the last period of time, so we've been very busy. It's been very, very hard to find time. But
somewhere in the great beyond, if there's a great beyond, James Joyce and William Faulkner are looking at each other across a table with a 1.75-liter bottle of old panther piss between them and saying, oh, fuck it. And just throwing the shot glasses away and sticking straws in the bottle and putting their little heads together like they're in a 1950s soda shop scene. You cannot... They were masters of stream-of-consciousness literature. But they could not in a million years have come up with madness like this. He ain't home. And to one degree, whatever degree we choose to ascribe to it, the Republic is not well. You know, because we're a couple of months away from State of the Union time, and the State of the Union is not good. Not good at all. Let's see, check back in with some of the email. Dave from Talibandiana. Hey, Bob, I don't remember. Hitler was a lance corporal, not quite a private, but not quite a full corporal. I guess that's why they don't see it. Donnie Dumbass, that sick bastard, needs to be hospitalized permanently. He's not well. For that matter, neither is Michael Richard Pencil Neck Geek. That's right. You knew there had to be a dick in the middle of it. Just saying. Your buddy Dave. Meanwhile, going back to the Raleigh story and the waste dump, Yonkers Road is about a mile from my house. They've been working on creek control for about 3 years. Haven't quite gotten it sorted out, have they, Ron? Glenn noting kickbacks. Maybe God has a deal with the insurance companies. Just saying. Well, if you know what? Insurance companies would deny coverage to God. Amazon orders 20,000 Mercedes-Benz vans for new delivery service. Wall Street Journal, this from Clarence in South Carolina. Look at this investment from Amazon. The Postal Service, FedEx, and UPS will have new competition for the last mile delivery. Wow. Steve in New York, Sound and Fury, Book 5. Benji's idiot cousin Donnie. And Darlene in Connecticut, subject line, verbal tics. Exactly. That's been happening for a while now. And what about the millions spent on protecting Trump and his American psycho family members at Trump Tower in New York? Or the cost for him to F around Mar-a-Lago every weekend? Geez, did Camp David get swallowed up by a sinkhole? Never been there, but sort of miss hearing about the place. I've heard it's kind of nice, actually, when you get right down to it. And then there's the, six digits that we spent protecting Don Jr. when he went to India to hustle condos. He was not on official business of the United States. He was hustling condos, and we were out for that a shit ton of money, too. So if dipshit Donnie wants to talk about wasting money, Yeah, as Darlene points out, there's plenty to point at. Not to mention, Darlene continues, but I will, that the Mueller investigation seized tons of Manafort's assets and bank accounts for the government, and as a result, has more than paid for itself. Here, Mr. Mueller, as an American taxpayer, I say take another $17 million plus, and you and your team have at it. The costs of the Mueller investigation are a drop in the bucket compared to the overall largesse of the federal budget, and it's well worth the price to find the truth. Yeah, this ain't no this way to the egress. And for a failed investigation that's never turned up anything, there seem to have been an awful large shit ton of convictions so far. And there are the persistent rumors that Beavis or Uday or whatever keeps telling his close friends that he expects to be indicted any day now. Perp walk, perp walk, perp walk, perp walk. Sorry, that was... maybe mean-spirited of me. Yeah, oh well. Hey, let's run over and check in with Sparky. Friday on the front porch gets a little bit of a late start, but that'll make up for the early start last week. Hey, Sparky.
Hello, Bob.
So you're indoors and it's still smoky, is it?
It wasn't that bad. It was just a little chilly out in the man cave. Because I'm in a room with a concrete floor and metal all around me that doesn't radiate heat anymore since there's no sun.
The sun went out, did they?
Well, no. I mean, I could stare at it the other day. Last night, out the garbage, you should have seen it, man. It was brilliantly bright red. Going down.
Jesus, and the numbers went up. 631 missing. Have they changed that number since earlier today?
No, not that I've heard. 63 dead. I told John earlier 66 and was wrong. But it's just so sad. And there was a big deal today. I don't know if you heard about it. The people are camped out in a Walmart parking lot in Chico.
Yeah, I heard an NPR report out of that.
Did you hear that somebody told them they had to leave and nobody could figure out who it was?
No.
The Red Cross says it wasn't them. Walmart says it wasn't them. So who was it? Just spread a rumor or something.
Some asshole. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, well, just wait till the Chico police show up and ask you to go somewhere else.
But, you know, there is going to be a legitimate housing crisis out of all of this, and I don't know how California is going to handle it. I heard the emergency services manager the other day saying some people just may have to leave California. And suddenly I had visions of Katrina and the depopulation of New Orleans.
I saw an interview today with a gal that drove all the way out from Ohio looking for her mother.
God.
And
because I guess the cell tower.
She grew up.
Go ahead.
She grew up in Paradise and all her relatives lived there. She's found everybody but her mother.
Oh, God. But, you know, that's another aspect to the disaster. No cell towers, and the hardwired phone infrastructure, gone.
The whole infrastructure of Paradise is
gone. I mean, there's just no paradise.
Yeah, but I mean, they're trying to bring the infrastructure back to life because my neighbor across the street works for a company that does traffic control for PG&E, and she's up there. I mean, she hadn't been home but maybe one or two nights in the last week.
And I keep hearing about PG&E's power lines as a potential cause. Are they getting closer to an answer on that?
Well, I think they're still out on that, but those are power transmission lines. I mean, geez. They They have Davy Tree Service out here. It's IBEW, line clearance tree trimmers.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they work their asses off trying to keep the trees away from them. But when you got 70 miles an hour wind, like what happened in Santa Rosa, I mean, it happens again. It will happen again. Because I've had wind gusts here take limbs off that oak tree, and then they got to fall if they're right up near a power line. The wind could blow them right into the power line.
Well, just this is an interesting piece of breaking news. Just in from the Associated Press, an official is saying that U.S. intelligence has reached the conclusion that the, and I know we're all going, duh, but it kind of matters that it's being sort of formally mentioned. U.S. intel has concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman directly ordered the killing of Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah, I saw that.
But I'm sure Trump will go over there and grope the orb or something again, you know, real soon.
Speaking of Trump, he's going to be coming to California tomorrow, and he's going to be meeting with Jerry Brown and our next governor, Gavin Newsom, and he'll probably have our dipshit rat fucker congressman with him.
Oh, LaMalfa?
Doug LaMalfa.
So he represents that area as well, Paradise?
Yeah, I mean, he represents practically all of the North State on the...
You know, with all the Republicans that went down in flames in California, how did that son of a gun manage to keep his job?
Just the district. He's been part of this district for like forever.
Wow.
He was assemblyman, state senator, and when Wally Herger retired after 24 years, he moved right into congressman. I don't know, about 8 years ago.
Yeah, it hasn't exactly set the world on fire in legislative. Well, it's probably bad analogy, but you get the idea. 22 minutes past the hour, and just to mention before we jump into the meat of the conversation, thanks to Dustin, we actually entered the program with not $200 to raise this evening, but only $185, and there's a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Gary and Gaia up in Oregon, so hopefully we'll knock that out somewhere along the way in the next hour and a half or so. But there's $185 with a $50 challenge on the table. Let's move around the room a little bit.
Hey, Bob, yeah. I got a bone to pick with. One bone.
Okay.
Did you call me a master electrician the other night?
I don't know. Maybe.
With your fascination with 440 volts.
Yeah.
Which is not used very much anymore.
No, it's just my favorite. Yeah.
We use 480 a lot at work.
Well, you know, it all goes.
I'm a retired journeyman inside wireman. That's my official classification.
Does that not fall under the general rubric of being a master of your trade?
Well, I'm not a master anymore. I'm retired.
Well, that doesn't mean you hit 65 and became stupid, Sparky.
62.
Okay, that too.
Once a Marine, always a Marine. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, no, that reference goes back to the wonderful film with Michael Keaton and Terry Garr and Martin Mull, Mr. Mom. You remember the scene where Michael Keaton's all jealous because his wife's working, and he's an out of work auto executive, and Martin Mull comes to pick her up early in the morning with a limo, and Michael Keaton meets him at the door with like a power drill or a saw or something in his hand. He says, "You want a beer?" And Martin Mull says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Oh, just a little rewiring." Martin Mull says, "220." Michael Keaton says, "220, 225, whatever it takes." "You want a beer?" 7 o'clock in the morning. "Scotch?" Yeah.
That was Mr. Mom, right?
Yeah. That's one of those. That's one of those eminently again and again and again watchable films. Scotch, because what I love about that one line, you know, Michael Keaton is a really good actor, and that was during his heyday, and when he says scotch. Now Michael Keaton's a Pittsburgher, but he nailed that Michigan accent to the wall with one word, scotch. Just, you know.
Did you ever see Founder? Founder with him in it. It's about the fuckwad Ray Kroc who fucked over the McDonald's brothers.
No, I never saw that.
Yeah,
oh,
watch
it's
that,
good. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's worth a watch, Bob.
Hey, is it fairly recent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Sparky, you will be happy to know I watched Jack Ryan.
All the way through?
All the way through.
What'd you think?
You know, it wasn't terrible. It bothers me the degree to which we're still making Bruga Bruga, scary Muslims, Bruga Bruga films. But the action was good. The special effects were good. The acting was pretty decent. I thought the guy playing Jack Ryan was a little bit, I don't, he seemed just a bubble off plum for the role. But maybe
I'd
that.
I'd like to see some movies.
Yeah, but he was more nerdish than action star.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was nerdy. That's, yeah.
When are we going to see movies about the new rise of terrorism, the new type of terrorism, right-wing domestic terrorism?
Fundamentalists, yeah. Good point, John.
Well, you know what, John? As a matter of fact, I was thinking about that. God. Because I do that. I'm in the process of, you know,
Agnes. That's scary.
Just shut up. go drink a Bud Light, Steve. Ooh, that was cold, wasn't it? No, Bud Light's warm.
It's a dish best served cold.
Well received.
Yeah. We've been watching The Americans, and I had to stop. The reason I watched Jack Ryan was because Agnes was gone for a week, and that meant I couldn't watch The Americans because we're watching that together. But interestingly, the backstory, and this is from what John said, the backstory to The Americans at the beginning of the thing, and I'm not giving anything away, is that the FBI agent, Stan Beeman, comes to D.C. To an FBI posting there, having previously been posted in Missouri, where he was undercover embedded for like 3 or 4 years with the Klan.
Where's this at? I mean, what network is this?
It ran on FX, and you may recall my conversation with my buddy Dan Fisher earlier. He said he never had more fun in his life and never loved his job more than working on that particular program. But your point is well taken, John, because just as a matter of current events. Down in Pasco County, Florida, according to WFTS-TV, at the end of a 3-year investigation, a multi-agency task force codenamed Operation Blackjack, they have arrested 39 members of the United Aryan Brotherhood and the Unforgiven neo-Nazi groups. And what's more, in the course of the investigation, they seized 110 illegal firearms, a rocket launcher, and 2 pipe bombs.
Gee.
Yeah.
Surprising, I guess.
I mean, that's why I said I'm getting a little tired of the Bruga Bruga, dangerous Muslims Bruga Bruga trope, because the real problem is here.
You got to worry about.
Yeah, the real problem is here at home. It's white males. It's Nazis. It's Klansmen. It's skinhead. Let's see. How about Green Bay, Wisconsin? They arrested a neo-Nazi there.
And the pharmaceuticals scrambling everybody's brains with these new wave antidepressants.
They found
a good movie on Prime about that called The Homecoming with Julia Roberts. You know, it's definitely worth a watch.
But just to wrap this up, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, 38-year-old Michael Tracy Anderson was arrested after a scantily clad woman was found hiding in his home. And in the home, they found a whole bunch of hazardous chemicals that could either be used to make bombs or meth. And of course, he's a white-wing domestic terrorist. And his Facebook page was chock-a-block with anti-Semitic memes and statements, and among other things, he posted a sort of swastika-ish image that had been turned into the letter G and was labeled Goyim Lives Matter, because they get all the Nazis get all pissed off at the Yiddish word Goyim, and they play neo-Nazi video games called Angry Goy and Angry Goy 2. And you know, this is just America. So your point is well taken, John.
Yep.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. How about you?
You know, it could be worse, could be better. I'd be better if I was somewhere that it was warm.
It's not here. It's nice, but it's not warm yet. But we got back up in the high 60s today, so that's warm enough.
Well, I'm doing better this evening, though, because it's a toasty 61.3 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios, and most of the week it's been in the 50s, and I'm such a hard ass, I can't bear the thought of going broke on propane and kerosene yet. I was talking with Agnes earlier, and I said, you know, if we can just make it to December 1st before we start going broke on hydrocarbons.
I mean, shit. Yep, I keep, every time me and Mama watch the news or something, I always say, that's why I don't live there. I can't do that snow stuff. I like it down here. It don't snow that much. Besides that, I like my temperatures to start with 8, you know, with 8.
80, 81.
Yeah. You know, I go all the way up to 98. That's fine. I'm used to it. So how you been, Bob?
You know, I can't complain. I think we got something to work with.
You can complain. I've been listening to you for an hour now, and you've got plenty to complain about.
Well, I mean, that's just news. That's just news.
Yeah.
But that ain't complaining.
See, ain't it pitiful? I'm sitting here listening to the Amazon thing, you know, and all the billions of dollars that's going for that, and we move into all the, you know, with the fires out in California and the homelessness is going to go on there, the trips that he takes, Don Jr. taking his trip to, you know, go sell condo. You know how much good we could do with all that goddamn money? We could make a hell of an impact in this country with all the money that we spend on bullshit.
Yeah, throw in Bessie DeVos, too.
Yes, throw that service in there, all that crap, you know? It just when you sit here and listen time after time, I mean, you know, story after story, and then we got to the fires and whatnot, and you just got done discussing how much money we have wasted doing X, Y, and Z, and then we get to this point.
You probably pay off everybody's mortgage and everybody start fresh, you know.
Hell yes, you could.
Jesus, man, wouldn't that be something?
You know,
no, that ain't gonna happen. Fuck no.
No, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Let me tell you, those soldiers on the border are really getting good at playing cards.
Yeah.
They'll be sharks by the time they get home.
Oh, man, you don't want to go spades with them, man. They will kill you, man.
When I was in it, was Hart.
Hart?
What, not Whist?
No, it was Hearts.
I worked in the Navy, it was Spades.
I worked swing shift, and when we were working on the SR-71s, I mean, from 3:30 to midnight, and if there was no work orders, we had nothing to do. We just sat in there and played cards.
Yeah.
And I was the only 5-level on the shift, too. The rest of the guys were all 7-levels. So they used to give me shit.
Here's a
they're all lifers, and I was a first-termer.
Hey, John, here's a fun one that just popped into my mind because it's a weird and busy place. You being an old salt and everything.
That's me.
Are there pool tables on really big ships like aircraft carriers?
Well, you know, Bob, I'd like to tell you the answer to that question. But, 7 years in the Navy, 16 for the... These feet have never been on a boat, Bob.
Christ, how would they keep them level? It's impossible.
I was Airedale, baby.
Okay.
On a boat. We flew wherever we went. I looked down at them ships down there and go, oh, that's too bad. You guys going to be in Japan next week? Yeah. Well, I'll be there tonight.
He worked on P3 Orions.
Yes, sir. P3s. I started at A's and B's and moved up to Charlie's. And, the rough part of our job was if you went out on a mission, well, that mission's about 18 hours long, you know, so it's a long ass flight. And, you landed on land, you know, so.
And that was a good thing. Flush toilets and everything.
Yeah, we had a toilet, you had a rack, you could go back there, you had a little kitchen back there, you could cook shit, you know. The most exciting thing that would happen was when we was on the Yellow Brick Road, shipping lanes out in Pacific, we would have to take surveillance photographs of the ships out there. And so we'd have to come in real low and do port starboard in the bow and then come in from the aft. And so you had 4 passes on a ship, pretty low. And most of the time, the old boys would come out on the deck and wave at you, unless you was filming a Russian ship. And there wasn't a soul on deck, baby. Nobody. Yeah, then we'd land somewhere like Utapau, and where Sparky was, and fix our aircraft or whatever we had to do, and then get back out.
Quite a life. Yeah, I was. That was just one of those silly little things, because Steve caught on pretty quick. How would you keep the damn thing level?
Well, now I have been on an aircraft carrier in port, so it was pretty steady. But I would imagine it wouldn't be that difficult unless you were in really tough seas. You know, because they're huge.
Oh, they are. They are, without a doubt. Hey, yeah. good news. We're off to a start now. Kenda just jumped in. She said to catch up my October and November subscription because PayPal got screwed up. It happens. So there's only $30 remaining on Gary and Gaia's challenge, and after that there'll only be $85 to go. So we've got a fighting chance here. That's wonderful.
Good deal.
Well, thank you, Kenda. Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Let's see. Let's run around the room a little bit. I see Dennis is with us again this evening. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going there, Bob?
What's happening, man?
Not a whole lot. I actually enjoy listening to you guys. I'm learning a lot, and hopefully I'll apply it one day with my own channel. I think I'm getting inspired enough.
Cool. Let 1,000 podcasts bloom, and if you need any help, yeah. I'm sure I'm happy to help, and I'm sure John is too.
Oh, hell yeah. That's what I tell people all the time. It's our voice. That's what we have. Our voice and our vote. We just used our vote. We did a damn good job. Don't let anybody say we didn't, baby. We washed over a lot. And I didn't get mine, but that's all right. Maybe we'll get it next time. But the more voices, the better. You know,
I've been talking to a lot of people about that as far as people just don't know. they just work and want to come home and relax. They don't even think about that kind of thing. And then you bring it up and you're like, well, I'm not really thinking about me. I'm thinking about my kids. What do I want to leave them? What kind of legacy do I want to leave? And the way things are right now, it's a nightmare.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Right now, we're leaving them a crap sandwich, brother.
Yeah.
Well, some people don't realize what's going on. Like, I worked on a campaign, Jess King campaign, with a woman who was she was in charge of training the volunteers and stuff for canvassing. And on the election day, we found a sign. Well, somebody found a sign off the side of the road that had talked about Jess King being a socialist, and some wing nut did it. And it was a very elaborately made sign. I mean, like, somebody was a good artist that did this. Some wing nut. And it had her emblem on there, and it had, for where the E was in Jess, it had the Soviet symbol. And so anyway, I saw this on election. It was sitting in the office on election day in the campaign office here in Red Lion, and I saw that, and I immediately got pissed off. And I started, getting, a little bit rowdy, not too bad. I made a little bit of a scene, and one of the ladies said, calm down, calm down. And she goes, there's no local fascist groups around. And I said, you mean the Republican Party? And yeah. She said, no, hang on. And she got all mad. She got mad and said, oh, hang on, that's not fair. They aren't.
Yes, it is. It's fair.
And some people are just in denial. They just are in denial.
If it honks like a goose and it steps like a goose, it's a fascist.
Yeah, it's a freaking Nazi.
The whole system.
I use a friend of mine, or used to be a friend of mine, Tony, the guy that left that phone message right after Kavanaugh got installed on the bench. And Tony's a prime example. Tony watches nothing but Fox. Tony doesn't know a damn thing about the issues, doesn't give a shit about the issues. He knows he's a white guy, and that's the most important thing.
Do you take him on, Uncle John?
Huh?
Do you take him on head-to-head?
Yes, sir. Oh, baby, yes, sir.
I'd love to hear
that. Oh, yes, sir. He right here in my yard. In my yard. He came to see me, nice guy, until he started talking politics, and then, oh, shit, he done opened a can of worms. I was trying to be nice. But
He's so nice, yeah.
Oh, speaking of yards, John, do you have one again?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do. As a matter of fact, I have both of them. I tried to explain before, the river, my property has two separate levels, like level the house is on, and then you come to the old bank of the river, which is grass, and it goes down to another level, which used to be the old riverbed, which is grass, and then you have the downward bank that goes into the river. It is back in the original down bank, and it's still high, but down in its normal bank. So I got a bunch of dead grass, one ice chest that washed up, I guess, at the last moment, found it out there in the weeds. So I got another ice chest. I think I have about 12 or 13, I swear, ice chests.
You can never have enough.
No, you can't. You don't have to put ice in them. There's lots of stuff you can put in them.
Well, when it comes to barbecuing, like when I do pork butts or a brisket or whatever.
Yeah, there you go, that food porn again. Go
yeah,
ahead.
After when they've been on there for about 15 hours, you take them off, and while they're nice and hot, you wrap them good and tight in aluminum foil, and you set them in an ice chest for about an hour.
And them juices out.
They keep cooking, and the flavor just concentrates and intensifies. And then you take them back out, you unwrap them, and you take out the smoking stone so that you've got direct heat coals. Let it get nice and hot, and then you just sear the outside so that you get that good burnt end thing going on.
Talk faster, Bob. Talk faster. I'm telling you, buddy. I see the pictures, Bob. You're a man of good-looking meat, buddy.
If all goes well, I'm going to check them on this food porn thing.
Yeah, we can have an independent report. Steve, if it sucks, you can get on saying, Bob, quit talking about it. It ain't fit to eat.
I would never do that, brother.
No,
I wouldn't do that. But Karen's really looking.
You get me going, I might get the drum cooker. fixed up again and do another pomegranate turkey for Thanksgiving.
Oh, that just sounds fantastic.
That does.
Well, I figure for the upcoming shindig, I'm going to do 4 butts and 2 big turkeys.
Nice.
You got a group coming, Bob?
No, I'm going down. I'm going down to
my neck of the woods,
to Steve's neck of the woods, to Malloy's book signing shindig.
Oh, there you go. I was just watching that conversation on the at the airport.
And gonna take some barbecue down and make some North Alabama hot slaw and homemade sauce, and should be good.
Sounds good.
I'm sure you'll hit it out of the park, Bob. I have no doubt, man.
Just gotta have. Go ahead.
Oh, I just want. Sorry to cut you off, but can I run something by everybody real quick? I want to know if I'm being reading too much into this. So the other day, it has been declared that Trump is now the uniter in chief. And this was said by Van Jones because support for bipartisan legislation in prison. And I understand that Van Jones did a lot of hard work in this. He lobbied Congress for this, and he worked really hard, and it looks like his hard work is being paid off. And I get that. But for him to say that, to me, is very just – I mean – how could he ignore everything else, and how could he absolve Trump of everything else, all the other heinous shit?
Yeah, it's a matter of word. It's a matter of word choice. It's a matter of word choice, John. I mean, you can say thanks to President Trump for his participation and taking this issue seriously and doing something right, yada, yada, yada. Thank you. You don't have to call him the uniter in chief.
Well, the same way that Chris Matthews said, we're all neocons now, when Bush jumped on the aircraft carrier with his fucking codpiece.
Well, yeah, I remember when Chris Matthews said that Bush gave him a tingle down his leg, so,
yeah. I mean, there's a parallel there. So, John, it's nothing new, brother. It's nothing new. In fact, it's been worse.
It's called obsequiousness.
Okay.
And it's ookie.
God damn, you're good, Bob.
I know.
That's the word of the day.
Say that word again, Bob.
Obsequiousness.
Obsequiousness.
O-B-S-E-Q.
Oh, look at this.
U-I-O-U-S-N-E-S-S. Obsequiousness.
Well, he's schizophrenic when it comes to Trump, because like just last week or 2 weeks ago, he was saying how racist Trump was because of calling Andrew Gillum a criminal, and now all of a sudden he's saying, he's got to be praised, give him his due. But I did see in The Root that a black man wrote an article in The Root today that said, no, I won't give the devil his due. so there is – he's getting some pushback, thankfully, but I just – it really stuck in my craw to see that. And then there was a woman who said who tweeted – her name was Jessica Sloan. She is a former mayor of somewhere. She goes – as a Democrat, I'm proud to stand by President Trump as he announces his support for the First Step Act. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take away from the First Step Act. I think it's good. We
but
need
the
it.
The word proud should not be associated with standing next to that man for any damn thing.
Right. And it's like, it makes me. It's like, are you one of those people that claim to be Democrats, but you're actually a Trump supporter? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe they're just caught up in a moment. Maybe I'm being too far.
But look, I mean, it's not limited to that issue. I mean, in the broader universe of, can we all please focus? Look at this dipshit notion that Richard Ojeda is going to run for president.
Oh, kiss my butt. Yeah, I spoke about him today on my show. No, I don't want to vote for no guy that voted for Trump and then figured out he made a mistake. No.
And lost to his opponent by 12 freaking points.
That's not as bad as telling me that you voted for Trump. Well, I voted for him and then I changed my mind. Are you shitting me? Were you watching the same campaign we were?
It's like
kiss
Bill
my
Crystal,
ass, buddy.
Bill Crystal, Steve Schmidt, all these fuckers. Fuck you.
I'll do your service, buddy. I appreciate it and all that. Now get the hell out of here.
You own it.
Grow a brain.
Steve Schmidt brought us Sarah Palin. Fuck him and the horse he rode.
And then there's the five white guys who are trying to lead the Never Nancy campaign. You know, how stupid can we be?
Boy, howdy.
That's getting us off on the wrong foot before it's even started.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't even take care of our own house. We're going to be in fact.
And, you know, Ojeda was one of those people who put out an ad and said, yeah, and when I win, I'll go to Washington and I'll tell Nancy Pelosi that she ain't gonna run her communist ways in West Virginia.
Yeah, yeah, that's why he lost. He's an idiot.
Aunt Nancy kicks ass and takes numbers. Let her be, man. Just let her do her thing.
Yeah,
she's gonna be fine. I don't think she's in it for the long haul either. She's ready to pass the torch. She knows what she's doing. This is a smart woman. She's seasoned. She's been at this a long fucking time.
And she has been whipping Republican ass longer than some people have been politically aware.
Yep. Let her be.
Well, in all fairness, who's better? Who has a fighting chance to outdo her?
Yep, bingo.
Nobody comes close.
But five white conservative guys, they're gonna sure.
Yeah,
I'm really disappointed. You know, I expected it from Tim Ryan. I'm really disappointed in Seth Moulton, out of Massachusetts. Then I guess we'll just kind of leave it at that. But yeah.
Well, you know, they try to use the excuse that Pelosi is the whipping stick that they use. Oh, look at Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. You know, that shit.
Well, you know, the thing hit out of him with a stick.
You know?
Hey, can I weigh in on this?
Yeah, go, Rick.
Sure. Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Hey, Rick.
Hey, hey. Brother Rick.
Hey, I'm trying to get to the North Georgia Mountains for Malloy's book thing, if I can.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'd love it.
It'd be great to meet you, brother.
It'd be a lot of fun. I'd bring my girl with me. She doesn't want me to go alone, she told me last night. So, why would that be? What could go wrong?
Trust issues already, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, this whole thing about, the Democratic Party, I'll use a pejorative term, ragging on Pelosi, maybe not a nice term, but you know, they're trying to denigrate her. And I mean, she's the one who engineered the frickin' blue wave. What happened in the Senate? I don't see Chuck.
Yeah.
Schumer
get the pass?
Yeah. Schumer's getting the pass, you know?
Oh, he better not.
No. Yeah. Well, yeah, he better not, but I mean, it doesn't matter. Your minority leader's not that big a deal, you know? I mean, it is and it isn't, you know, if you can win a big election. But it's like, I mean, Pelosi's the most fucking effective leader the Democrats have had in the legislative body.
And when she was speaker, quite arguably, she was the most effective speaker of the House that has been in the modern era.
She pushed through the Affordable Care Act, and everybody thought that was an impossibility.
Well, so, she's probably the most effective speaker since LBJ, I would say.
Yep.
She's been giving all the freshmen personal meetings and telling them why and what for.
Yeah.
So she's going to school them, yeah. Yeah, man. She's taking them to school, absolutely.
You know, and I mean, she's just a fount of information and knowledge and experience and, I mean, the Democrats would be stupid to make it a big fight about, you know, who's going to be the speaker. Who else has the clout to keep all the Democrats in line and to strategize what the best route is?
Right. And do you reckon that whoever's going to come next might benefit from her wisdom?
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't put an 18-year-old kid in to start for an NFL team. I mean, generally speaking.
Nothing good will come of that, Bob.
It didn't work out well for Tim Tebow, did it?
No.
Hey, Bob, go to Steve in New York real quick. His battery's about to die.
Okay. Hey, Steve. Steve?
Maybe that's too late. His phone was running out of charge, I guess.
Oh, damn.
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Yeah, hey, Steve.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm in the subway. I just got out of the subway train. I wanted to weigh in real quick. Oh, shit. On a recipe that I came up with for a turkey. It's a pesto turkey.
Oh, yummy.
Yeah, what I do is normally at my place what they do, they just only cook a turkey breast because there's not very many of us. So I make my own pesto, of course. I cut the skin back, smear the pesto all over the skin, then put the skin, pin the skin back down, and then bake it and baste it with olive oil and freshly shredded Parmesan to put nice crust on there.
So yeah, that's
really good.
That qualifies as food porn.
Yeah,
it does.
I want to say one more thing about Pelosi and the people who are against her. I think there's one thing you guys that everyone's missing. I suspect these people went to her and said, look, you understand the politics of my district. You understand that I got to do what I got to do. And she wouldn't, the only time she would care about that is if she didn't have the votes to be speaker. So she's allowing them to do what they need to do. And let's be honest here, she's by doing that, she's playing hardcore realpolitik, letting the people on the outside think that they're doing something, let their constituents think that they're standing up. She will be speaker, and they can go back to their district and say, hey, I tried.
Awesome point, Steve. Awesome. Well done, friend. Yeah.
She knows. Listen, I am of the opinion that we need new blood, but like, you know, and Bob pointed this out, you can't argue with those results. You just can't.
And it's going to happen, but it has to transcend smoothly. You know, it can't just be some knee-jerk reaction. It'll happen, and right. She will transcend somebody in of her choosing smoothly. And that's what she, I believe, I'm not inside her head, but I believe that's her plan.
Absolutely. Listen, if there are two people we really need to get rid of, and that's Steny Hoyer and Schumer. Schumer is just a milquetoast wet noodle that needs to go. And I'm from New York, but I think he's horrendously awful.
He's a good senator, but a bad leader.
He's not even a good senator. They used to call him senator. When he was in the Congress, he was Congressman Press Conference.
Oh, yeah,
we need a warrior.
He does love cameras, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of appreciate the scope of what Pelosi did, you know, I saw a map today. They were Ted Lieu from California was being interviewed on CNN, and he was. Oh, there we go. And Ted was basically saying, look, you know, all six congressional districts that like are part of Orange County are now in, you know, Democratic hands. And, you know, in 2014, only two out of the six were, you know, the congressional districts that of which Orange County is a part. And I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, there were some very close races just decided this week, I think. And there's even a chance that Ed Royce's old seat is going to be won by Gil Cisneros over, I think, a Korean lady who's running. She was like chief of staff to Royce. Last name is Kim. But I mean, you know, for all like six congressional districts that are part of Orange County or part of which are in Orange County, at least to be, you know, to go from Republican to Democratic. I mean, that's amazing, you know? So, I mean, she obviously targeted a lot of resources to those districts and to other districts that, you know, she thought were winnable and, you know, the bet paid off. So, to say she's not going to be speaker, I think is ridiculous. I mean, you know, I know some of the sparkle-powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade will never forgive her for taking impeachment off the table with regard to George W. Bush. But it's like you can't argue with success, you know. So why would you pull your shivs out and do exactly what the Republicans want you to do, which is they're basically trying to choose the Democratic leaders by dissing on Pelosi. But, you know, they do that whenever there's a good Democratic leader. They did it to Hillary Clinton. I don't know if she was that good a leader, but they did it to Bill Clinton. They did it to Obama. They do it to anybody who's effective. That's a sign that you're being effective if you're being criticized.
Well, right. And
impact on the vote.
Just to as we've noted before, just to assume for a moment that, let's say, somebody else became speaker, I have a hard time fathoming that some Democrats are so simple that they don't realize that the next word out of the Republicans' mouth over whoever became speaker would be, "That's the most liberal Democrat since Karl Marx." You know, even if it was Seth Moulton, and Steve's point is well taken, but where Seth Moulton is concerned, I'm looking at his district, and yeah, it's 89.8% white. But it's also 69.7% white collar. And I'm having
potential ambassadors for the United States.
And I'm having a hard time figuring out that it's so difficult for him to sell Nancy Pelosi in a place as ostensibly liberal as, you know, Massachusetts. So there's that. And by the way, I'll just go ahead and mention, since we're 59 minutes away from the program, we're trying to get to the, we're trying to finish the week's fundraising, and $30 to go on a challenge courtesy of Gary and Gaia. And then we've got another $85 beyond that. So we need to bring in, $115, which ain't much. To finish off the week. So hopefully that will happen. It's interesting. We were talking about Rich Ojeda, and Agnes directed my attention to an article in the local paper here, the Gazette Mail. Gazette editorial: presidential run, not the right move for Ojeda. Listen to this. I mean, talk about fainting with damn praise. A few of Republican Carol Miller's ads against Democrat Richard Ojeda in the election for U.S. House featured President Donald Trump saying Ojeda was essentially too unstable for federal office. While that's rich coming from Trump, Ojeda's hasty decision after losing to Miller to run for president is a bit of a head scratcher. To say the very least. But I'm a cynic, and I just see it as a matter of figuring out a way to get paid.
That's got to be it, because he ain't got a snowball's chance.
Because there are interests out there who, for some reason, are absolutely fascinated, although at a tremendous distance, with West Virginia politics, and have been trying to mess around in West Virginia politics, again, at a great distance, since the beginning of the year.
Jake Ugert.
Yeah. Who said that?
Me.
Who's me?
Yeah, well, John.
Oh, hey, John. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's basically it. Yeah.
Well, about Nancy Pelosi, I was talking to somebody who said, they go, "Well, she doesn't want to impeach Trump," and she goes, and they go, "Why?" It is a woman, actually. She goes, "Why not try to impeach Trump? All we got to do, we have the votes to do it now. All they got to do is vote him, and he's out." And I said, "Wait, do you not know that there's got to be a trial in his head?"
You got to be kidding me. Is that what it is? People just don't understand. They think that, oh, he's impeached, he has to leave?
Correct.
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
Even if he was impeached and removed, it's questionable whether he would actually vacate the office. He might just, you know, call his minions out there and have them, you know, surround the White House to protect him.
Well, as I pointed out earlier this week, that interview with the Daily Caller, he did exactly that. He said Antifa better behave themselves, or a lot meaner people are going to come out and they're going to really beat the hell out of them.
And there's the groundwork of what he's been trying to do all along. It's a known fact he wants to divide this country. Now he's laying the groundwork, and the Republicans are laying the groundwork. Well, you know there's voter fraud everywhere. Look down there in Florida, there's voter fraud over there. Donnie coming out with the disguise every 5 minutes, go in and vote. All this bullshit is just trying to undermine the voting system. Because he said it before in his own campaign, he'll respect the decision of the vote if he wins.
Yeah,
if he doesn't win, he's not going to respect it.
And
so
remember,
that shit goes out the window.
He said this the same day that Van Jones called him the Uniter in Chief, man.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
cool.
Jesus. But, hey, let's check in real quick over on the stress line. Hey, who have we got? Who we got?
It's me, Bob Reggie from Decatur, Georgia. Here once again. How do you feel about Jim Acosta's CNN victory over getting his hard pass back, even though it's temporarily, I think.
Well, I think I think it was pretty obvious, Reggie. I mean,
yeah, it was the only thing they could do. But I'm sure it chapped that judge's ass to do it because he was appointed by Trump.
Yeah, it was because he was a Trump-appointed judge, right? He was a Trump-appointee that had to give back Jim Acosta's hard pass.
Ain't it sweet?
You know.
Well, but it didn't. Wasn't it a Trump appointee who also put the kibosh on the stupid argument that the guy known as Putin's chef should have his indictment dismissed against Concord business, the Mueller indictment? Wasn't that guy a Trumpansy judge too?
But they said they gave it back to him temporarily, but I'm not sure if it's temporarily or permanent.
But
do you think they will actually do you think the news will actually stop Trump from trying to do it again to other people? And not to Jim Acosta again, other reporters that he doesn't like?
Well, that's what's followed, Reggie. I mean, the Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags gave some stupid analysis where she said, well, you know, the court confirmed that there's not an absolute right to... Well, no court's ever said there was.
Right. But she's just coming out with that bullshit lie, right, Bob? She says what is, you know, what somebody tells her to say, or read it off the teleprompter, right? Or what the president tells her to go out there and say. But you don't think they'll try to do this to him again after any other reporter that asks him the toughest of all tough questions that he doesn't like, or that he has a personal vendettas against?
I think if they do, I think the same thing will happen. It will not only be CNN, it will be the media en masse, journalists en masse, that will join a lawsuit to protect that. That's as well as should. You know, I noticed this time Fox News even joined this lawsuit with CNN. You have to start to think it impacts one. What impacts one is going to impact them all. You know, it's just who's playing the game right now. And you know, we have to believe that the news organizations will band together to demand their rights. You know, because it's obvious what the dick is trying to do. He's pissed off. He's pouty. He's got his panties in a wad. He's all mad and hunkered down in there and just whining his butt off. That's what's happening. And the press is being mean to him. Fuck off.
Yeah.
You know? I'm sick of that shit. You know, because that's what we see every damn week is, you know, our nation runs on what mood he's in. You know, is he in a happy mood? Is he pouty today? Does he feel a little bit bold?
Yeah, this is the same kind of shit that the court of George III did. You know, that he suffered from periodic bouts of outright barking madness. And so, right. is his Highness stable today?
Yeah, that's what we all have to worry about. You know, because you're right. He'd go whip off his clothes and start playing with his pecker one day.
Well, I mean, honest to God, check back. I mean, maybe there's precedent for this. Maybe there were a couple of times when Barack Obama didn't go to the ASEAN summit, but I don't remember. When does the? I mean, that's one of those things the president usually goes to, isn't it?
Right.
So why couldn't the old geezer just not make the trip?
Yeah.
You know Kelly O'Donnell, the NBC White House correspondent.
Yeah.
She look at her Twitter account once from over the weekend. She really went real far out of her way to defend Trump over that, and I think that's a little suspect for a NBC White House correspondent to do that, to go out of their way to defend him like that. It almost seems like, and if you look at her Twitter account in all, there's no criticism of him at all, ever. Just you know, merely stenograting, like a stenographer of him, pretty much, just repeating what he says. And then there's even a picture that's pinned at the top of their thing with Air Force One touching down. And I'm thinking, man, you just put the MAGA hat on already.
Right.
Just like Fox News, part of the propaganda network. The state TV, the state news agency.
Well, maybe there's something going on with Geezer Disgustus and Kelly, you know.
And Donald. Brian Jenkins is always defending Trump and the Trump administration. Always. If you follow his show comes on at 11 o'clock, you'll end up turning it off because he's always playing defense for these.
Brian, you mean over on MSNBC?
Yes, sir. Was it Williams?
Yeah, Brian Williams.
Bob,
yeah, the 11th hour. It is.
I've been getting a big laugh of watching Rick Santorum on CNN come out and dance around everything.
Hey, don't forget about Howard Kurtz, too, man, on Fox News.
Yes.
Yeah, but I tell you what, Brian Williams is unwatchable. After that just awesome lineup of Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow, Lawrence O'Donnell, and then it's like... Brian Williams,
yeah. He needs to stick off of making up fake plane stories, you know. Just get off my TV.
And, this is just a little bit of, us tooting our own horn. But this is kind of cool. I just got a note from Alma out in New Mexico. A link to a Washington Post op-ed. And it is titled... Right-wing extremists are already threatening violence over a Democratic House. The backlash to the election is coming.
Oh, shit.
Well, but wait. Lo and behold, the author of the piece is none other than our buddy, David Neiwert. And what it boils down to, you know, I say a lot of the time, that if you want to be out and if you want to be so far out in front of the curve that it feels like you're on straight road, that's what you get here with what we do.
Right.
We say things, we figure things out before the for-profit millionaire media do.
Right.
And this is that. This is exactly that, because in the hour-long conversation that I had with Dave Neiwert a couple of weeks back. Well, everything that's in this Washington Post article is in the conversation we had here. And so literally, the horn was 2 weeks out in front, 3 weeks out in front of the Washington Post. And, you know, that says something. That means something.
Right. Right. Well, Bob, what do you think about Melania ousting that lady that used to work for her in the White House?
I'm having a hard time working up a big sad over that. The woman worked for John Pornstash Bolton. But look, melanoma is just taking care of, she's taking care of her future.
Right. And she keeps talking or speaking about cyberbullying. Is she being hypocritical or what?
Yes, she's being a hypocrite.
Be bad.
Why you say that, Bob?
Absolutely.
Well, no, she made some statement earlier today. Let me see if I can find it, because when I saw the CNN headline, it was like, what the absolute fuck? Hold on.
Shit, them going to the Marine barracks was an embarrassment.
Embarrassment. She like her husband, man. She's one fry short of a Happy Meal, too.
The CNN tweet was, Melania Trump on her initiative to tackle cyberbullying. It is not news or surprising to me that critics and the media have chosen to ridicule me for speaking out on this issue, and that's okay. So I just subtweeted it and said, shorter CNN, Melanoma Trump knows she's a hypocrite. Done.
I think that was great, Bob. Do that again.
They think the world is like their
Did you just tell me to do that again, Steve?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe one of these evenings we'll do an entire. Maybe we'll do a Melanoma Moran Monday, and I'll do the entire program just like this. You know, everybody talks about how. You know, how brilliant she is. Oh, she speaks six languages.
Kiss my butt. What did she ever do with it? Did she work as an interpreter for some government?
John, you've been overseas. Sparky's been overseas. I imagine y'all may have met some women along the way who could say, hey, sailor, or hey, airman in six languages.
Yes, you bet your ass.
It reminds me of the villainous from the old Tennessee Tuxedos cartoon series, man.
It ain't every day you get. It ain't every day on a progressive radio program you get a Tennessee Tuxedo reference. Hang on. Yeah.
What's her name, Natasha?
No. That's Bullwinkle.
Bullwinkle.
Moose and Squirrel.
This is Irwin. One thing about Melania is that she took a, what was it, for special uniqueness or special whatever to get into the country that went to her for some reason.
Yeah, she got into the country on a visa program for freaking geniuses who, like, know molecules on a first-name basis.
And then went to work as a porn model.
As a porn model. And then used what white wingers like to call chain migration to bring mommy and daddy over across the ocean.
And they also
bring some soil from the old country.
I think what bothers me the most about it is that there was somebody out there that had the ability to do something for the country, and they were passed over for this person, you know. That just really pisses me off.
You talk about somebody who could have contributed to the country being passed over, Irwin. It's sort of like Donnie Bonespur's five deferments. I think you can argue that there are at least five names on that terrifying black granite wall, that heartbreaking black granite wall in D.C. There are at least five names on that wall because Donald Trump was too big a chicken shit to serve his country.
Thanks, Bob.
Go with Ted Nugent, Bob. Go with Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent was busy pissing his pants.
That's what
Ted Nugent does.
Crapping himself.
But, but five deferments, And Count Dicula, who got seven.
Then he's a chicken shit now.
How many people are just, how many are there in a squad? Military wise, what is it? How many are in a platoon?
Oh, a platoon shit! Now you're talking about 60 men.
Okay, and a squad is a sergeant and. Three or four.
14.
Yeah. So there's a squad. There is a squad worth of names on the Vietnam Wall from the people who had to go because Dick Cheney got seven deferments and Donald Trump got five and George W. Bush chickened out. And oh, what was it?
See a trend there?
Was it Donald Trump? Was it Donald Rumsfeld who said he would have been glad to go? But no. It was Tom DeLay. Who said he would have been glad to go to Vietnam, but all the good jobs were taken.
At least the late great John McCain served his country, right? Right, Bob?
Well, I mean, I'm very conflicted over John McCain, but John McCain was part of what was basically a military aristocracy in this country. His daddy was an admiral, his granddaddy was an admiral, and he went and did what McCain men did.
Right.
Yeah.
And even
ain't no doubt John McCain should be honored for his service.
Yeah.
But when you look at his service, he wouldn't have been flying that damn airplane if he would have been anybody else than who he was.
Right.
Because you can't crash that many airplanes and the Navy and keep flying. They don't let you do that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like Pappy Bush. You know, he was Pappy Bush, H.W. At the time he went into naval aviation, he was the youngest naval aviator in the country. Most people don't remember that. But he was, and the reason he was is the Bush family had to pull their fat out of the fire because Daddy Prescott had just gotten his ass stone cold busted working for Brown Brothers Harriman under the Trading with the Enemies Act. And so in order to save face, away young H.W. went to war. But then... And it's sort of a previous echo, John, of what would later happen with McCain. Pappy Bush, young Pappy Bush, gets to be a naval aviator, and they put him in a torpedo plane. You know, he's not going to go zipping off any aircraft carriers, in an F-6F Hellcat or an F-4U Corsair or anything like that. No, they stuck him in a torpedo plane and wouldn't give him any torpedoes. The only things he ever went out on were recon missions to take pictures. And then on that fateful day over Chichijima, he gets his ass shot down and hits the silk before his crew has a chance. And so he lets them corkscrew into the ocean. Bailout Bush was the term.
Right.
Yeah, this is Irwin. I think that maybe Bob Dole is maybe one legitimate Republican
he was for real.
Went into the service, yeah. But
who else was legit, and it helped to form the core of why he took the positions that he took. George McGovern was legit.
Yes.
He flew. You know, he flew missions. In a bomber with flak, you know, with flak exploding all around him. Or then, you know, and talk about somebody that had no reason to do it whatsoever. Daniel Inouye. Daniel Inouye, gone but not forgotten of Hawaii. His parents were in an internment camp, and he signed up and got his ass shot all to pieces fighting his way up the Italian peninsula. And when you think about heroism like that, it is positively sickening to think of a Donald Trump sitting there, "Oh, I've got bone spurs."
Max Cleveland left body parts in Vietnam, on the fields of Vietnam, and these bastards had the nerve enough to demonize him and morph his picture into Osama bin Laden. These fuckers have no shame, man. No shame whatsoever.
Well, just look at the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, led by Jerome Corsi. I mean, what they did to Kerry, you know? So these people just...
I'm sorry to interrupt, Bob. Go ahead. I was listening.
No. That's okay.
Yeah. And you know who else served this country, Bob? Whether you like them or not? Richard Nixon.
Did he?
I think so.
I mean, I think he was in the Navy. I don't think he ever you know, actually went out and got shot at or anything.
Right.
But he served.
Yeah, he did serve.
And then and then there's old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Right.
Who by the time he was president thought he had served because he'd done some B movies where he got to wear a uniform.
Right.
And he got to sell war bonds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Even Elvis Presley served. He was a singer. He was over there in Germany for 2 years. You know, Elvis Presley?
Oh yeah, I remember.
He served. He served, and I don't know who else served that was in Hollywood.
Johnny Cash served. He was.
You know who didn't serve? You know who didn't serve? Noted red baiter John Wayne.
Oh, that's right. He didn't. Right. I guess he played one in the movies and on television. But who did and who didn't, sir, that was in Hollywood?
Oh, God, we don't...
At any given time in our history, there's only 1% of the population of our country that served. And if we were as patriotic a country as we proclaim to be, we would probably be something like Israel. Everybody fucking served.
In some capacity or another. If you're not a fighter, there's something you can
do. There is a job, baby.
Right.
You know, but...
I totally agree. Totally.
You know, it's you would think, I don't know. You fall back in that old thought of, you know, we're one country and we're all together and we're in this together. We should all want to, you know, do something for our nation at some point in your life. You know.
Right.
And but we're not that way. We're not, and nowadays I look at the Republican Party as those who sell a bumper sticker. We support the troops, baby. It's a bumper sticker. That's what they sell. They don't sell anything else. They're not in it.
They put slogans. Right, and they put a yellow ribbon magnet on the back of their Escalade, and the yellow ribbon magnet was of course made in China.
That's what it is.
Right.
It's just a false sense of patriotism that the Republicans have put a grasp on. Well, Republicans, we're patriotic. Kiss my freaking ass. No, you're not. I say it all the time. The Democrats are the ones that need to reclaim that title of patriots because we're willing to fight for the damn values that this country stands for. We're not willing to sell it down for Russians, Saudi Arabians, or any other, or a bumper sticker. You know,
right. Oh,
we're the ones out here trying to make things better.
And when I got out, nobody gave a damn that I served.
Nobody give a shit. And half of the guys that got out, nobody walked out with their uniform on. Are you shitting me? You got into civvies.
I got discharged in civilian clothes.
That's me. I came home in civvies, baby. You know, with as much hair as I could possibly fucking grow. And stuff under my hat.
Yeah, you know, we queued it up. We queued it up the other night.
Did
and
you
use
dippity-doo?
Yes, I did, baby. Put that shit up there and look it greased up. Pull that ball cap off and I'd have
to. Flopper, Dapper Dan.
I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Dapper Dan guy.
Oh, wait a minute. Ernest Borgnine from McHale's Navy served that thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Glenn Ford, Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
Eddie Albert.
Right.
Yep. But at the risk of running the community away, what's that line we queued the song up the other night? And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Nope.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I used to say, and I still feel this way, that the last time that this country was united in an effort, in a war effort, was World War II. After that, things went downhill. Things became a skirmish in Korea. You know,
absolutely.
And Vietnam was
a police action.
Yes, it was a peace action, and there was no longer a front line. There was no longer a line that war ended.
Korea was ugly.
Well, and that's because
fucking war all around you.
And that's just because there's some shit we ought not get into.
Right.
That's true. And realize when we should get out, And we're not there yet with, you know, we're still over in Afghanistan and shit. We're going to be over there forever.
Which, okay, so wait, that's a segue to another story this evening. And by the way, we are 30 minutes away from the program, and we're still trying to knock down the last $30 of Gary and Gaia's end of the week challenge, and then trying to knock out another $85. So, you know, we got $115 to raise, and it would be great if we could end like we did last week, just end the week flush.
Enjoying this conversation out there, y'all chip in there, because that's what keeps Bob running. You know, so if you're listening, consider it.
This does segue. I guess the stench has risen far enough that it's made the White House a little bit nervous. You know, the business, you know, they tried to trot out the, well, you know, Trump wanted to go to the cemetery for Armistice Day, but they told him the helicopters wouldn't,
it was raining.
The helicopters wouldn't fly in the rain, and he didn't want to disrupt Parisian traffic. I have ridden in Parisian traffic, and Parisian traffic is nothing if not pre-disrupted for your convenience, okay? A ride in a Parisian cab is an exercise in horror. I mean, just pure white knuckled terror. But anyway, so none of that washed, and then there was what happened at Arlington, or didn't happen. You know, him blowing that off too. And then it got even worse because people began to point out, you know, Trump's been known to go to military bases and use the troops as a prop. But he's never actually managed to visit any of our service personnel who were actually in harm's way, to wit, you know, Afghanistan.
He went to the Marine barracks.
Or visiting VA hospital.
So now we have the official White House excuse. The New York Times has reported that Trump doesn't. Visit troops in the war zones because he doesn't agree with the war and he doesn't want them there in the first place.
Oh, fuck
off. Is that true or false?
That's what they're claiming.
We just know he's a chicken shit.
Bring him home. Or, I mean, look, that's vomit-inducing. Nobody despises what we're doing in Afghanistan more than I do. I remember back when Barack Obama said, I disagreed with the Iraq war. But I felt like Afghanistan was the right war at the right time. And I was like, ah, holy fuck, really?
Good, Bob.
Well, thank you, John.
Bob is multi talented.
I mean, dang, he's talented. Got all sorts of voices in that head.
Oh, you don't want to know.
Oh man, I'm telling you.
I can't disagree with what we did in Iraq or what we're doing in Afghanistan and have done in Afghanistan any more than I do. It's wrong. It's illegal. It ought not happen. Okay.
I mean, you've never been there.
Right.
Period.
But then there's this. I do not hold the people who signed up responsible for the horrible decisions that their leadership has made.
They're a victim of circumstance.
No.
A lot of them were in poverty, they needed jobs, and they got caught up in this war machine, which happens. And it's been happening for the last 40, 50 years. You know?
And you know, if you're a Marine and you're stationed in Afghanistan, you have been preconditioned to want to be there.
Oh, sure.
But the fact, you know, there's people who want to be there, there's people who don't want to be there, but each and every last one of them deserve our respect.
Absolutely. And their gratitude.
And to say that you're not going to... even so much as let them see your face because you disagree with them being there. Well, buddy, they didn't start that war. I mean, this is just another example of the breathtaking perfidy and stupidity and hypocrisy and, yes, cowardice He's afraid. He's afraid. Yeah. If they made him put a fucking helmet on his head, it would, well.
Yeah.
He's a coward. Yeah, he's bad. A coward
he'll
like
take
his.
Take his hair off if they put the helmet on.
He's a coward like his daddy was a coward, and he's a coward like his granddaddy was a coward.
Like his
yeah,
kids.
Well, don't forget about his sons. They're cowards too, Bob.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the yellow the yellow stripe is about 8 lanes wide and runs at least 4 generations through that disgusting the clan.
They don't make a flak vest his size.
And that's where these kind of things is where our voice comes in. Bob's voice, Dennis was just talking about possibly speaking of, this is why. This is why we got to keep holding this kind of shit every time it happens. We're going to have to force the Republicans to defend a scumbag. Every little drip.
Oh, they own shit. Trump. They own Trump, Uncle John. He's theirs, man.
Yeah.
They own him, and they're going to have to take responsibility for him. And
come 2020, let them stand up there and defend this damn disgusting orange shit stain that's in our house. Because eventually, just the drip, 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 you just keep talking about it. You keep reminding people.
The disenfranchisement is disturbing. Everybody knows what happened in Broward County, Florida, with the recounts, correct? They were 2 minutes late.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, yeah, and they wouldn't accept him. And Broward County is democratically majority, so of course they discounted them. 2 minutes. You're saving hair, man. We're being fucked, and we're sitting here watching it, and we're taking it.
Right.
And if you don't think these votes, these electoral votes, are going to count in 2020, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah, Florida's a big problem for the Democrats.
It is.
It is. We've got to fix this. We have got to fix this Florida thing.
Oh, and by the
We've
way, Darlene.
All this voter shit.
Darlene in Connecticut with a note. Geez, I thought we learned not to blame our servicemen and women and veterans for the poor decisions of our politicians from the fallout over Vietnam. Again, Trump reveals his deficits in understanding and appreciating history. And
I wish we could make every.
That's the absolute truth, that's the absolute truth, Darlene. But it's not just a lack of understanding and appreciation; it is an outright, utter, and complete disdain.
Well, I wish we could make every GOP.
He wanted to be the hero of everything. He wants to be the number. He can't do that with the veterans. You're a piece of scum shit, is what you are. That's all Trump is.
I mean, I still find it hard to believe that he couldn't, that he decided not to go to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One. I mean.
Well, but Rick, that's what I keep coming back to. I don't think it's a refusal. I think the man was unmanageable.
He had his panties in a wad. He was all pouty, and that's how he's going to, I'm not going to go. And
so
you can't make me bold. No, John,
that's my point. I don't think it was that. If we can respectfully disagree. I think the man was barking up a tree crazy, and I think he's having more and more of those things.
Still crazy today.
And they couldn't get. And in France, after the jet lag that comes with flying across the Atlantic, they couldn't get the meds right.
Bob, let me say something.
And he is on meds
today. He was passing out Congressional Medal of Freedoms to dead people, Babe Ruth and Elvis Presley. What the fuck? Yeah. Where is that
coming
from?
Did you hear that today? Because I did. Yeah. I was in my truck listening to it on satellite radio, and this is what I could hear. Well, is everybody... Jesus, are you shitting me? Did anybody else notice that? You could hear every breath he took just about. Sounded like he's sucking in from a freaking jetliner or something.
It was a total diversionary tactic.
He was on drugs.
Well, okay, so look at the optics from that soundbite that I played earlier today, where he was talking about, how he wrote out his answers. My lawyers don't write my answers; I write my answers. Why is it? And search your memories, okay? Now, after 9/11, W came on and he was sitting behind a desk or something, wasn't he? I mean, it all runs together after a while. Sure, presidents are occasionally shot. Presidents are occasionally photographed sitting down. But why is Trump always sitting down? If he has to stand up, things go sideways. He stood up at that press conference after the election, and things didn't go well. He managed to get out for a ceremony in Paris at a nearer cemetery, and he swayed. And Todd talked about this the other night. He swayed from one foot to the other, and he fidgeted the whole time. The only way that they can make him functional is to put him on an industrial dose of fucking crank.
Or Adderall. Or Adderall, Bob.
That's something. Because they're afraid not to take it off.
Hey, Bob, I wish we could make every GOP and every conservative news media, news reporter, radio, and TV talk show serve in the military. You know, men and women.
Well, I don't necessarily think you have to do something like that, Reggie. I don't believe in compulsory service. But
your heart's not in it.
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, if it was a sort of conscription where you knew that there was no way that a Donald Trump Jr. or an Eric Trump could get out of it, yeah, maybe. But they will always find a way out of these things. Always.
Right. Prove
you got
trust
the money, baby.
Oh, and hey, I got it.
Let me circle back to this Florida thing real quick. We've got to fix this because 2020 is upon us. And if we don't, so goes Florida, so goes the nation. And
but here's the problem. The fix we need, Steve, is a national fix.
Yes, right. There you go.
Okay.
Clean house.
Agreed. We can't micromanage Florida, but something has to be done. We've got a serious problem. The system is broke.
Well, I mean, okay. Let's use something on a smaller scale. Our buddy Robert in Australia, who just sent me a note saying I grew up on John Wayne movies. They were always on. I was very disappointed when I found out what he was really like. But Robert writes in from time to time describing the Australian election system where, you know, you're never more than 10 minutes in and 10 minutes out. It happens on a Saturday. Voting is compulsory. You don't have to tell them how
to vote.
You got to vote. But here's the thing. I mean, Australia is a continent. Okay?
Right.
It's not a huge continent, but it's pretty damn big. I mean, it's a hell of a ride from Sydney to Perth. And yet, unless Robert tells me otherwise, the same voting system that they use in Sydney and Newcastle and Brisbane is the voting system that they use in Perth, 1,000 miles away. Okay.
Right. How unusual.
Now, right.
How a unique thought.
So, you know, why can't we do the same thing? And it goes back to this failed notion of 50 petty kingdoms. The Congress has the right constitutionally to federalize something. They can say, we're going to set a standard, and it's going to be a national standard. The Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. But in the case of elections, we leave it to these little petty fiefdoms who, left to their own devices in places like Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, et cetera,
county by county,
bust their asses to make sure that only the right people vote. So the solution is, the solution, Steve, if I may,
sure,
is to not just fix Florida, fix North Dakota, too, and fix Mississippi. And one of the things that Nancy and Pelosi Texas is talking about, H.R. 1, is going to be a bill that has something to do with restoring the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
So, you know, that's important. Let me just update real quick. I want to send thanks out to our buddy Hung Like Jesus, because he just
Jesus.
Yeah, he just knocked down another chunk of.
All right, Hung.
He just knocked down another chunk of Gary and Gaia's challenge. We only have $20 to go on Gary and Gaia's challenge, and $85 after that. We are down to $105 to go in 16 minutes. Good so. Hopefully that'll happen, and we will finish. It'll be 2 weeks in a row. We've finished the end of the week the way we need to. So
and Hung came before, so he's not only hung like Jesus, he's kind too. So,
exactly, go, kind like Jesus.
Thank you. There you go.
Right.
This is
we got time for a music update.
Hold on, somebody.
Oh, shit.
Hang on, hold on.
Sorry,
hold on,
John.
Hold on, Bill. Erwin, were you trying to get in there?
Yeah, I was just going to say. You know, about North Dakota. One thing about North Dakota is it's so small that there's no gerrymandering possible. Montana's the same way. I think states like Texas are probably more important in the long run, but that's just my opinion.
We are gerrymandering.
Why did the Dakotas and Montana get two senators each? Something doesn't pass the smell test.
Well, that's slavery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's another instance of the Constitution being poisoned by slavery. And I think I may have mentioned that at one point in time, but we can talk about that on another evening too.
Yeah, that's the discussion for another evening.
I don't want to get out of here without hearing from Larry, because Larry's been waiting patiently. What's up, Larry?
Larry. Hello, Larry.
Larry, huh?
Not finding his mic and unmute button, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably so. Say, Bob, do you think we should start cleaning house politically? Like, get rid of all the bad, you know, politicians and bring in some, well, decent, moral, good ones? If we, you know, all we can find? Or what?
Well, that's what we're working on.
That's always the goal, but no, I'd like to just clean out the Republicans. Because you would,
right?
You'd go a long way toward that in that regard. Yes. Who hollered, Bob?
I think that's who he meant.
Bob, it's Larry. Hi.
Larry. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
I hope you're doing okay, Donko, up there in Reading. I hope your health is okay. I hope you're.
I'm not in Reading, Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
Red Bluff. I hope everyone's fine. We've got air quality problems here in the Bay Area, and I know what's happening, and you know, with all the stuff in what the Congress did, I'm okay. My father's recovering. Bob, my father had a stroke.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it, Larry.
He's recovering. I've spent the last couple of days home from school, and because they've closed the schools down here. And as far as I was listening to something or reading something yesterday from a podcast, I know you know who Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon are, Bob.
Yes. Black Agenda Report.
Black Agenda Report. And they were saying, one of the commentators was saying, I live in Georgia, and I want and the vote was stolen. There's no question about that. And the white guy, Kemp, is a white supremacist. But Stacey Abrams, when she was the leader of the state legislature, took a lot of money from the same sort of economic interests that the Republicans do. So he doesn't have a lot of the only thing he's saying is that we need to make sure the vote gets counted and everybody has the opportunity to vote. But he says he's no fan of Stacey Abrams. I haven't heard her speak, but Mercedes tells me
she's
very
brilliant.
Well-spoken.
Oh, she's brilliant.
That she's very well spoken. So, and here in California, you know, our rent control bill didn't pass.
Went down in flames.
Yeah, it went down 61 to 30. What was it, Rick? 61 to 38? I think that's what it was. But, so, you know, I keep on Hey, you know, I'm just doing the best I can, and I'll send you copies of whatever artwork I do, Bob. So.
Oh, that would be awesome, Larry. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I'll also send you some articles, too, occasionally. So.
That's fine. Okay. I appreciate that. Oh, you talk about painting. I saw our buddy Joy, up in Ann Arbor. I was looking. I saw. I guess she started taking an art class and posted a couple of her paintings, and it was like, holy cow, just beautiful, beautiful work.
Well, I'm just hoping Dunk is okay, and staying out of the poor air, because there really are air alerts here.
Well, and you know, our buddy Tony and Chico, who is one of our longest standing subscribers. I'd like to hear from Tony to make sure he's okay too.
He's got the worst air going last night.
Right.
We were like at 178 air quality index, and they were over 300.
Wow.
Is this parts per million, Sparky, or what?
Well, it's air quality index. It's a reading of the Weather Service.
But one of the factors there. I don't know who's feeding back, but one of the factors in the air quality is that they said there was a whole hell of a lot of PM2.5, and the smaller the smaller the particulate, the worse off it is, because it goes deeper into your system. And Rick, we're going to do a concert report real quick, just in a second. I just need to update, because I need to send out thanks to Charlene and Joseph. We have met Gary and Gaia's challenge. And now we only need $80 to finish the week. $80. So that's pretty impressive. That's really impressive. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
but you said there's you've got a concert report, Rick?
Yeah. I went to see a country music festival, of all things, down on the beach last weekend on Sunday, actually. It's called Driftwood. And I missed Brandon Ray, I think the guy's name is. But then I heard a band called Jamestown Revisited. They were really good. I don't know if anybody's heard of them.
Jamestown or Johnstown?
Jamestown. Okay. Jamestown Revisited. And again, these are all country bands. But I mean, country is really... You know, new country is really more like rock and roll used to be in some ways. You know, it's the beat and stuff. And then I saw Sugarland without the female vocalist. And then I saw Big and Rich to close the night out. So it was a lot of fun.
Wow, I didn't even know those guys were still together.
Yeah, Big and Rich. Yeah, they're still together. Yeah, so
ain't that? Rich is a big Republican.
Yeah.
Big Kenny's a big liberal, John.
Yeah, ain't that a match?
Yeah,
but I have to admit I enjoy their music. So
yeah, no, they did, of course, you know, save a horse, ride a cowboy, and
that's that, right,
that whole thing.
Did they do that? Well, no, I guess.
And then there was a guy who came out. The best part of it was like two thirds through the show, this tall black gentleman came out, you know, wearing a cowboy hat.
Troy.
He's called
Cowboy Troy.
Cowboy Troy? Okay, I thought it was Cowboy Joy. I wasn't sure.
No, Cowboy
Joy. He's good. He's really good. That was
6'5" with a cowboy hat.
Yeah. That was very entertaining. He has a great voice. And I mean, he almost did like country rap, if that makes any sense.
I can sing that, Rick.
You know, can you?
I sing. Yes, I do. Well, I ain't going to sing in that.
Oh, damn it.
No, hell no.
Come on, John. Give us
a break. No, I haven't got it going on
he's
in my
got,
head.
Give him a break. He's got a cold going on.
Oh, God. I've been sick all week. I skipped my show on Wednesday, so.
Oh, that's
today
too
was
bad.
The first day I've been back.
Oh, you are? You must have been feeling poorly.
Oh, yeah. I was down really bad.
Well, all that work for the election probably got you, John, right?
A lot of that, and a bug came around, and I got it. And,
oh, geez.
I still had work to do with the pen for the donkey. The water was still, you know, all that shit just caught up with me, I think.
I hear you. Yeah, so yeah. I'm actually going to see John Mayall who is considered the godfather of the British blues, on Saturday night at a small venue in Pasadena called The Rose.
You're killing me, Rick.
Like an 800 person nightclub, something like that. And for those of you who may not know about him, he is a blues singer, a pianist, a harmonica player, a guitarist, a songwriter.
He's the man who changed Mr. Stress's life.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
How so?
When John Mayall's Blues Breakers came out in the 60s, Mr. Stress heard it, and he said it was like nothing he ever heard before. And he said, I got to do this. And so he began singing and playing the harp.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, very cool. Very cool. Well, anyway, his Blues Breakers band has included such great guitarists as Eric Clapton, Peter Green, Jack Bruce, Mick Taylor, Walter Trout, a bunch of them. So I actually saw him at a couple of summers ago at the Arroyo Seco Festival in Pasadena. But, you know, because it's a festival type of an act, he could only play for maybe 40, 45 minutes, you know, to get the next act on, you know?
Right.
But
Clapton didn't sing, I don't think, until he joined John Mayall. The first track Clapton sings on is on a John Mayall album, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I used to have it back before somebody in the Beta House stole all my records.
Oh, my God, that's not fair. I'm looking forward to it. And then I also saw an announcement that Alan Parsons is going to be playing in Beverly Hills on April 4th.
Oh, that would be trippy. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, and I snagged like third row seats in the orchestra right away as quick as I got the announcement, because I wanted to see him a couple of years ago and didn't do it. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. And John Mayall, so I'll give you all a concert report next week.
Definitely. And by the way, just to loop back onto the Presidential Medal of Freedom business.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to giving Presidential Medals of Freedom to dead people.
And big donors.
Well, that was where I was going. One of the live people he gave it to.
Oh, sorry, Bob.
Was, no, that's cool.
I was fixing to go there.
Yeah, one of the live people he gave it to was Miriam Adelson, who has never done a goddamn thing for the United States
how much money she paid for that thing.
Except for give money to Republicans. Jesus Christ.
Baby.
And by the way, in regard to the band that that Rick saw, Michael and Madison, our from time to time musical consultant here, Jamestown Revival, was that what it is? Jamestown Revival, two young guys from Texas, one piano, one guitar, both sing, plus a band. He said, I saw them in a bar a few years ago. Good stuff.
Yeah, they were probably the best of all of the three, I'd say.
Jamestown Revival. Okay, cool.
We grow good music down here in Texas, baby.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Fucking A.
It must be in the water.
It's got to be. It's got to be in the water.
So, Bob.
It's in the soul, baby.
Bob, I got a question.
Yes, sir.
You're going to Mike Malloy's thing coming up on the 30th, right?
Correct.
I will come on one condition. Is there a pool table there?
I have no idea.
Look at this. Sounds like a challenge there, Bob.
I will accept no billiard challenge. I sucketh. I can find more ways to sink the eight ball and send the cue ball in after it than actually exist in physical science.
Bob Scratchman.
I do the same thing with eight ball. Nine ball's my game.
That's me. Bob Scratch Kincaid.
Nine ball is the game to play.
Yeah. That's my game this year.
Well, Rick, you could probably go on Mike's site and just Google the facility. And
I know. I'll Google it. I was just joking. I'm trying to see.
I don't know.
Yeah, Steve was giving me some tips on where to fly into, like maybe Greenville instead of Atlanta.
That's an option. Of course, Bob's picking up a friend but I'm not going to go there. It's not an option for him. But yeah, if I had to fly in from somewhere else, I'd go to Greenville. GSP. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
By the way, I wanted to ask, is might have a new book coming out, or
yeah, that's what this is all about.
Get together.
Colored Ice Cream is the name of it.
Right.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
So why the name of that title? Because he had a different title initially.
I think that was a working title, but
I have
a feeling he will explain the title somewhere within the confines of the book.
Okay.
By the way, Rick, John Mayall is sort of like the code godfather of the blues with Alexis Korner and Cyril Davies. And they gave birth to the Rolling Stones and a lot of those very same musicians that John Mayall brought along in his band. So
okay.
I might add that, but I hope you have a great time.
Looking forward to it.
And everyone else. Hope everyone else is doing great.
Hey, Bob. Thanks, brother.
Yes, Parky.
Before you check out, I did some research for you. The Founders on Netflix, if you have it.
Okay, cool. Good deal. I do have it, so I'll check it out. Is it fairly recent, or?
Yes, it's only about a year old.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm glad to see Michael Keaton coming back, you know, because he's a wonderful actor.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. Yep. No spoilers. No spoilers.
But you know what the plot line is.
Right. Yeah. I know some of the history. Right. Well, thank you, Sparky. And thanks, everybody else. Thank you, Sparky, for hosting this evening. Thanks, of course, to everybody who jumped in this evening. It was nice to have you along, Reggie and Dennis and Irwin. And, of course, John Bridevo, Blue Dot in Texas. Go find the podcast. Check it out. Larry in the Bay Area, Billable Rick, Steve from Georgia, Stan. It was good to hear from Steve and in New York, and it was good to hear from John in PA. Thanks, all of you. Thanks, everybody who keeps the program on the air. We're going to finish the week only, $80 short, and that ain't terrible. We'll try to deal with that maybe on Monday if it doesn't change over the course of the weekend. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.